right. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be with you here today. We have a lot of videos to get to today. We're finding out more about the bridge collapse in Baltimore, more on P. Diddy. It just goes on and on. We also have some major action by Israel in Lebanon, Syria, and Rafah, of all places, after they canceled the meeting with the Biden White House about the invasion of Rafah, over the fact that America, for once, didn't veto their ceasefire measure at the UN. But we got some interesting debate videos from Jordan Peterson and Destiny. And I just want to go to this clip number 10. Here's Jordan Peterson debating Destiny, who, against all odds and for no discernible reason, has become a fixture of the left and is debating these right-wing intellectuals. Let's go to Jordan Peterson here. Go in beast mode on Destiny.
But the other obviously glaring possibility is that injecting billions of people with a vaccine that was not tested by any stretch of the imagination with the thoroughness that it should have before it was forced upon people also might be a contributing factor, partly because we know that it led to a rise in myocarditis among young men. And we also know that there was absolutely no reason whatsoever to ever recommend that that vaccine was delivered to young children, so whose risk of death at COVID was so close to zero that it might as well have been zero.
When you're talking about a disease, the risk of death isn't the only thing that you worry about for the disease.
So you're going to talk about transmission?
Yeah, but it didn't do anything to transmission. Absolutely did, because it decreased your chance of getting infected. It didn't destroy, it didn't get rid of transmission, but it reduced transmission.
Yeah, but it was claimed that it would get rid of
only
transmission.
Only if you take one reading of one single quote, I think, that Biden said one time where he said, no, come on, Biden one time on the news says, if you get the vaccine, you won't transmit the disease.
That is so silly.
Which was
no. Do you know that our prime minister in Canada deprived Canadians of the right to travel for 6 months because the unvaccinated were going to transmit COVID with more likelihood than the vaccinated? So this wasn't one bloody statement.
What I'm saying is there wasn't a statement given that if you get vaccinated, there is a 0% chance of transmitting the disease. The idea is that vaccines were supposed to help because it reduces your hospitalization, reduces death, and it reduces transmission, hopefully by making it so that people don't get sick or don't get sick for as long. All three of those things the vaccines did exceedingly well. They were tested. The myocarditis rates are like 7 out of 100,000 injections, and the myocarditis is generally acute, and it's generally not as bad as even getting the coronavirus itself, which will lead you also
it's
to having
myocarditis. It's a much worse side effect than side effects that have caused other vaccines to be taken off the market before.
Seven out of 100,000 rate of acute myocarditis or pericarditis is not a worse side effect than any other vaccine. I think that is a completely acceptable, given that the disease itself is more likely to cause myocarditis or pericarditis.
Yes, I don't think the data suggests support that presupposition anymore. The latest peer-reviewed studies show that that's simply not true, especially among young men. I told you at the beginning of this conversation that the progressive leftists were on the side of the pharmaceutical companies.
It's not about being on the side of the pharmaceutical companies. It's about...
Really?
What I see
as the unholy part of that alliance with the pharmaceutical companies is that it dovetails with the radical utopians' willingness to use power to impose their utopian vision.
Well, then what do you
make
of the fact
that... Otherwise, how would you explain it? Because the leftists should have been the ones that were most skeptical about the bloody pharmaceutical companies. And they jumped on the vaccine bandwagon in exactly the same way that you're doing right now.
Pharmaceutical companies have helped us tremendously throughout the...
Yeah, right. There we go. Fine. No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
You're just wrong.
I think
you're
utterly
wrong.
I see. So you don't think that the pharmaceutical companies who dominate the advertising landscape with 75% of the funding are corrupt?
I don't. Corrupt is a very broad...
No, it's...
Do you think that corrupt with a tinge of malevolence, willing
to extract money out of people by putting their health on the line?
Do you think that we get effective drugs from pharmaceutical companies?
Not particularly.
Yeah, better pivot, Destiny. Pivot, quick, pivot. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Infowars.com, band.video. Please do share those links on X and everywhere else. As you know, the way censorship works now, they're not just removing you from the platform, They're making you think that you're on the platform, but they're crushing your reach. We can overcome that with your participation by sharing the links on your own personal media, tagging other people, sharing them around, forcing them through the censorship blockade. We got a lot of stories to cover today. We got more information about the bridge in Baltimore. We've got more squatter nonsense with more homes being taken over by unscrupulous liars using the court system to their own advantage. We got lots of videos to get to, your calls, and a packed third hour with Henry Facey at Info Uncensored, who's been going viral with his behind-the-scenes clandestinely gathered footage of migrant centers in New York, for which he has paid a very dear price, and we'll talk to him about that. We're also going to be joined by Clint Russell of Liberty Lock Pod, talk about how we avoid World War III. So very busy third hour today. Your calls in the second hour. Let's begin, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 27th of March, 2023. Our first story, New York City begins distributing prepaid credit cards to illegal immigrants. It has begun. That $53 million pilot program is off and running. They've asked the illegal immigrants promise to only spend the money on food. They're not tracking it or restricting their ability to spend it on anything else, but they've pinky promise, so we can trust them, right? The criminals that came here illegally, we can give them money. And we'll get into exactly what illegal immigrants are receiving in today's America later in the show. Stay with us for that. Meanwhile, also in the topic of immigration, the Mexican president is demanding tribute. Mexican president demands U.S. pay up or flow of migrants will continue, which I think in politics is considered an act of war against our country. He's demanding $20 billion a year, amnesty for Mexican migrants, and sanctions lifted. President of Mexico, in an interview, has confirmed what essentially appears to be his attempt to blackmail the United States into paying billions of dollars or else, quote, the flow of migrants will continue, which, as I just said, is in fact an act of war and should be treated like such. But we'll just give it to him. We'll probably just give him the money and he won't restrict the flow of immigrants. And so we'll receive nothing at the end of the day. That's how it typically goes when your country is run by people who despise your country. Speaking of, our third story in the Daily Dispatch, also about illegal immigrants, yet another ultimate price paid for the diversity, for the tacos, for whatever we're getting out of this little deal. Joe Biden's America. Illegal alien murders Grand Rapids woman, dumps her body on the side of the road. An illegal alien from Mexico fatally shot a Grand Rapids, Michigan woman on Friday and dumped her body on the side of the road. Brandon Ortiz Vite was charged with fatally shooting 25-year-old Ruby Garcia and leaving her body on the side of the road. He faces one count each of homicide, open murder, carjacking, felony firearm, illegal carrying a concealed weapon, operating while intoxicated, and driving on a suspended or revoked license, records show. It's unclear when Brandon Ortiz illegally entered the U.S., but he did have a prior arrest all the way back in 2020. So, you know, just more dead Americans for this immigration system, which makes no sense and is just a criminal action against our government, or against our people by our government. Again, we'll get into some more effects of illegal immigration later in the show. Meanwhile, we are learning more about the Baltimore crash into the bridge. We have some more video that's very interesting, some input from various people, Coast Guard and the like. One thing that has been discovered, this hasn't been confirmed yet, but apparently the local pilot on the Baltimore Bridge Breaker ship is very proud to have been the first woman to successfully compete in this male-dominated profession while working on merchant ships from 1887 to 96. So, yeah, it's always wonderful to have the first woman in a position where typically men only operated. Just don't do any follow-ups. Just don't follow up on what happens to them once they achieve their career goals. It doesn't go well usually. but that's okay. It's good and it's wonderful. And hey, a collapsed bridge, a destroyed infrastructure system, a deeply unhappily populace of all genders, a entire population driven to madness by a life completely and utterly divorced from anything natural, good, real, or tangible. Small price to pay for the virtue of having a particular set of genitals in the driver's seat. It's amazing. It's wonderful, and it's unquestionable. Finally, we have this. Kremlin reveals conditions for talks with U.S. Moscow is ready for an all-encompassing dialogue with Washington, as they have been for the last couple of years, and multiple times have tried to bring the Western powers to the negotiating table, at times actually achieving some form of negotiated peace, only to have it scuttled and destroyed by pressure from the UK or the US or other NATO influences. So maybe it'll work out this time. Maybe now that it's a truly hopeless mission, defending Ukraine from Russia in the most misguided, senseless war in, well, never mind, there's Gaza too. And then there's the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. The latest in a series of ridiculous, purposeless, senseless wars perpetrated by those who call themselves our government. Russia remains open to negotiations with the United States, but will only agree to comprehensive discussions of all issues of concern, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov has told reporters. Russian ambassadors to Washington said on Tuesday that the diplomatic mission had only transitory contacts with the U.S. administration since a deadly terror attack in Moscow. But next week, we'll discuss bilateral relations, how we can live on, and if there's any chance at all for Russian-American relations to not be completely destroyed. But of course, Russia is both Christian and white and are therefore the existential enemies of the people that run America. So they'll destroy Russia and America in a 1-2 punch, driving us both towards World War III, which benefits nobody but themselves. It really is something to see. It's not exactly unexpected. The unexpected part is that they're getting away with it and they just keep doing it and it never ends. Seems strange that that's the case, but it is. That's your Daily Dispatch, brought to you, of course, by Survival Shield X3, now on sale at InfoWarsStore.com, the nascent iodine product that has effects that are almost beyond description. You can discover the power of activated triiodine and its true nascent amplitude potential at InfoWarsStore.com. Survival Shield X3 now back in stock and on sale. 40% off, massive discount. Like I said, we have a lot of videos to get to today. Some of them just sort of unrelated to others. I may just want to go to some of those. You know, there's so many things where it's like, you've got immigration, you've got World War III, you've got the massive crime wave that continues unabated, you've got racial hatred, you've got racial reparations, you've got just a number of topics that are all just aspects of the total destruction of this country that we're witnessing, almost like they're speed running the destruction of an empire. But I think the squatter rights argument sort of encapsulates it all. Let's go now to clip number 17, as we have another story of yet another squatter, yet again, using the legal system to defraud and annoy and cost an average American family huge amounts of money, time, resources, and strife, when they could just have the Castle Doctrine and treat the guy like he deserves. Let's go to clip number 17, as yet another squatter refuses to leave a home purchased this time by a retired couple for their mentally disabled son. Let's watch.
There shouldn't be a problem, and it becomes a nightmare, a total nightmare.
Buying a dream home turned into a nightmare. You heard him. For this family from Queens, the house came with something the new owners did not bargain for, a squatter. More than 4 months after purchasing that home, the family says they still can't go inside, and they've faced roadblock after roadblock trying to get the man who is staying there out. Investigative reporter Dan Crowell joins us now with more.
Sandra, the family says they've had no choice but to take the man living inside their home to court. And despite having hearing after hearing, they still haven't been able to move in.
it has just taken over everything.
Susanna and Joseph Landa bought what they thought was their dream retirement home in Douglaston, Queens.
We're looking to hopefully retire and most of all provide for my son, Alex, who has Down syndrome. He has a disability.
The new house is right next door to family members.
I just want to know that I can die tomorrow and he's next to his brother.
They signed the deed back in October.
And then what happens?
The nightmare begins.
The house came with something unexpected. A man living in their home, who they say refuses to leave.
We couldn't believe it. We could not believe it.
His name's Brett Flores.
They cannot come here early when I'm not here.
They have keys. They're the owner.
This is what happened when the Landas tried to enter with an insurance inspector. They say Flores called the cops on them, even though they say they gave him 10-day notice.
He wasn't a renter.
Never.
You didn't sign documents that said, we have a tenant.
Correct.
Court documents detail, in Flores' own words, why he's there. A signed statement says he was hired by the former homeowner as his caretaker, was paid $3,000 a week, and his employment ended in January of last year when the man died. He claims he has a license to stay.
A license to stay in the house. Again, I think it's just sort of emblematic of the rest of what's going on in America. You've got people who are doing the right thing, who are investing in their future, who are buying a house for their disabled son, who are trying to do something that is just an integral part of the American dream and home ownership, and they're being abused, humiliated, annoyed, cost hundreds of thousands of dollars by these despicable scumbags who aren't even shy about what they're doing. Like, we're entering into this new phase where crime is not something that's shameful or kept in the shadows. They just do it right out in the open because they know they can get away with it. They're taking advantage of the legal system. They're using the cops to their advantage. And as long as you have the temerity to stand up and act like the victim while victimizing somebody else, apparently you can get away with it in this country. And of course, you can combine that with the fact that it's basically impossible for young people to ever buy a house for the rest of their lives. Like, that's in America and Canada as well. Canada, a big report just came out saying that basically if you're under 35, it will never be possible for you to buy a house ever in your life, which, of course, is the plan. They don't want you owning anything. They don't want you passing anything down. They don't want you building wealth, especially not intergenerationally. You've got to be crushed at every pass. Everything in your life has to be rented, has to be given to you on conditional permission, has to be debt laden. It's the absolute destruction on purpose of the American dream, or anything even close to that, of the basic structure and composition of the Western world as we've known it for the last 1,000 years. That's all going away on purpose because you combine things like the squatter's rights abuse, which is just sort of a different form of this phenomenon of just taking advantage of laws that were written for a open, free, honorable society where you would put laws in place to allow squatters' rights because it would just be something that occurred and you needed laws to handle the situation as it kept cropping up. And it would be something like somebody has land that they're not on for years and years. Somebody doesn't know it's owned, so they go and set up a home, and it would be unfair to go and just kick those people out once they've been there for 2 years and built their own house there. And, you know, there was a reason squatter rights laws were put into place. It is not for random losers to steal houses from, you know, decent, respectable couples. That's not what it was there for, but that's what it's being used for. Just like how the asylum program was there for people who were being persecuted by their own government or under threat of war. And now it's being used by Guatemalan families of 10 who got a bus ride from the UN to the American southern border. It's that we have a moral framework in this country that has moved away from the structure of law. It is no longer applicable to the type of people and the type of behavior that we're witnessing here. So it has to change. And of course, on top of that, you've got the trend of big private equity firms like BlackRock buying up entire neighborhoods, buying up a huge portion of the homes available in America. that should be going to young people. Instead, they'll buy them out and rent them to those same young people for the same amount they would be paying in a mortgage, but just taking their money instead of providing them equity in a piece of real estate. Maybe that's the solution. Maybe if all of the squatters could just take over the BlackRock houses, we could like solve this problem. But of course, I don't think BlackRock would have the same problem that an average American family does in kicking out squatters. I have the feeling that if a squatter takes over a house rented out by BlackRock or one of its subsidiaries, it would be dealt with pretty rapidly. But I'm willing to find out. I'm willing to put this to the test. I would love to see these squatter scumbags, these thieves, these criminals and destroyers of civilization. I'd love to see them take over BlackRock houses by the thousands. I think that could be a great deal. I think it could be a thing you work out with the squatters. You go, look, this is my house. I bought this. You're staying here illegally. You got to leave. But, you know, the house next door is owned by Berkshire Hathaway. So take that over. Just go over there. I'll help you break a window. We'll get in and we'll take this over. And you take them to court for the next couple of years while they try to legally evict a literal stranger from living in their house. It's all completely absurd. And of course, I support the castle doctrine, which means that if somebody's in your house without permission, no questions asked, you can shoot them dead. I think that's actually the appropriate thing to do. I think that happens a couple times. This whole squatter phenomenon just sort of goes away on its own accord. I think if squatters realize, oh, they can just come in and shoot me in the chest, I'm not going to stay here anymore. I'm going to find a different way to leech off of the system. But again, it's emblematic. It's symptomatic. It's the reality of our situation just manifests just in a nice, little capsule. It's the modern American way that those breaking the law get support of the system. Those who don't belong are given every advantage, while those who do the right thing are disadvantaged at every turn. That when you try to use the legal system in an appropriate way, you'll be screwed over. If you're using it in a dishonest, conniving, thieving way, then it's there at your beck and call to serve you. And the police seem incapable of determining whether the nice older family with the deed or the dude who says he's been here for a year because he's a handyman. Oh, gee, which one is the one I should serve? Which one is the one I should, actually protect, and which one is the one I should force out of the home? They can't decide. They don't know. It's above their pay grade. They're just thoughtless robots that adhere strictly to a law that makes no sense and shouldn't be applicable in this situation. So you've got like all of these different elements, the mindless servitude of the police, the abuse of the legal system, the punishment of Americans doing the right thing while rewarding criminals. Whether it's immigration or law enforcement or the corporate world, I mean, this is where we've gotten to. And there's nothing that's going to pull us out except for us just doing it. So, you know, Florida's been really good at this. Some other states as well, where they just in like a week pass the laws. Like something new appears and they just pass a law to ban it and it just goes away. And it's as simple as that. It's a losing strategy in the long run because you're constantly playing defense and you're constantly trying to just outlaw things that they'll just change around the verbiage and find some new legal way, you know, legal workaround to do what they were doing anyway. But just off the top of my head, I mean, over the past year, it's like they're starting to put bugs in the food. Maybe not bugs, but I think I think Florida banned lab-grown meat. Right. They're like, oh, we've just created this lab grown meat out of a tumor cancer and we're going to sell it without labeling it. And Florida's just like, no, you're not. That's illegal. Boom. Pass that law. Squatters rights don't really exist in Florida. Why? Because they saw what was happening and said, all right, that's not going to happen anymore. We're undoing that. It should be simple, really, when you have something like these squatter rights being viciously abused over and over. Yeah, we're not going to do that. Fake meat. That's it. There you go. Done. Problem solved. Oh, they're going to complain about it. They're going to whine. They're going to say, but no, we could make a lot of money with lab-grown meat, or we've put a lot of money into lab-grown meat. Well, that was a bad idea because it's of Satan. So now you have to go bankrupt and go away forever. That's kind of the point, actually. It's not a bad thing. That is the point of why they're doing that. And they should be. Look at that disgusting. I mean, it's just revolting, like on a spiritual level almost. So, you know, kudos to Florida for oftentimes just stepping up and making new laws that just ban these, you know, gray area legal ventures. I don't know why we can't do that nationwide. I don't know why every state isn't jumping on that. Even Tennessee recently banned chemtrails. I didn't think they existed, but now they're banned. You can't spray particles into the air in Tennessee anymore because the state government will fine and arrest you. That's what the government is there for, to protect the citizens that it presides over from abuses from other governments, from their own government, from foreigners, from corporations, from their neighbors. That's the reason we have a government. So that's what it should be doing. So when it comes to things like squatter rights, what the hell, New York? Just undo the squatter. Just go, oh, we have a set of laws that can be taken advantage of by unscrupulous con men who simply find empty houses and steal them from the people who bought them. Let's not let them do that anymore. Is that really that difficult? Is that really that hard? It's the frustration, I think. The ultimate frustration, the ultimate black pill, is not that all of these problems are so overwhelming that we can't solve them. It's that they're so easy to solve and we just don't. Which makes you realize, when you really think about it, that the problems are on purpose. If there's an easy problem to solve and the person in charge of solving it isn't solving it, that's on purpose. That's by design. That's willful negligence. Willful being the key word there. Whether it's squatters, immigration, just basic corruption, abuse of the citizens, it's a choice that's being made. It's on purpose. You know, San Marcos follows voters' wishes and shuts off fluoride. There's so many things that's just like, people act like we can't do anything about it and act like, oh, the squatter rights, oh, it's such a big deal. How are we going to solve this? Gee, it's not complicated at all in reality. People are abusing the law, change the law. People are taking advantage of a legal framework in order to disadvantage or abuse or victimize innocent people, change the law and punish them. It's the point of our government. Of course, you wouldn't know that from what our government actually does, and I'll just explain that on the other side. Also, make sure to be following all of the accounts on X at Real Alex Jones, at InfoWars. You can follow me at Harrison H. Smith. We'll be doing a Moonbase live broadcast tonight at around 8 or 9. That'll be the quarterly report. We're going to be covering stories that didn't get enough attention in the first 3 months of this year. And it's a doozy. You can also subscribe to my Substack, where I'll be posting links to the stories that we'll be covering on the quarterly report. It's hundreds. I mean, I know we always talk about how much news we have, how many stories there are that we like can't even cover. It's like impossible to describe. I wish I could just transmit my brain while I'm just looking through my bookmarks. Because it's undeniable when you have all of this information all at once, when you're just seeing headline after headline, trends start to appear, revelations start to come. That's, I feel incapable of expressing, you know, verbally. I wish I could just transmit straight from my brain the way that the news makes you come to certain conclusions. And so for the first 3 months of the year, I have over 200 links that I consider like major stories, not just like one-off things, like major earth-shattering revelations, 200 of them or more. I'll be publishing that on my Substack for the paid subscribers later today, I believe. Maybe I'll wait a few days just to let the first 3 months fully close out before I post that. But did have a bit of a viral post yesterday about what's being offered to illegal immigrants. And I want you to really imagine, really try to put yourself in the mindset of having these things offered to you. Say, what if instead of taxing you, instead of taking money from you at every opportunity, the government instead gave you $1,400 in cash every month? That alone would be a life-changing amount of money for a lot of people out there. But what if it also paid your rent up to $9,000 a month? Yes, $9,000 a month, since illegal immigrants are getting hotel rooms that cost $300 a night. Well, for 30 nights, that's $9,000. So what if it paid you $1,400 and paid your rent up to $9,000 a month, but it also bought your groceries and it paid for a maid to come clean your house and a laundry service to do your laundry on a daily basis if you want? What if it also paid for your air travel? What if it also offered free babysitters, free daycare and preschool? What if they paid for all of your health care as well, including hospital visits and dental visits? What if it held community events where it got all the kids in the neighborhood together and took them on free field trips to amusement parks? What if it was also pouring billions of dollars into improving the infrastructure of your neighborhood, fixing the potholes and repairing the broken windows? Because they're doing all of this and more for illegal immigrants. And I'm not just saying what if rhetorically. I really want you to think about what your life would be like if you never had to do laundry again, if you didn't have to clean your house because a maid would do it for you, if you got free cash over $1,000 every month, but also didn't have to buy food because that was paid for. Good food too, prepared food, not even just raw ingredients, but they'd pay for your Uber Eats and your restaurant outings. It is actually excessive. I'm not actually advocating that we should do this for American citizens, because I think that's pretty obvious. It would be some form of communism to have all of this stuff paid for. It's impossible to afford it. But that's not the point. The point isn't, gee, Americans should be getting all of this. It's Americans are being robbed blind, are barely being able to afford their lifestyles as is, and the money's being taken from them to pay for this for illegal immigrants. And none of this is an exaggeration. If anything, I undersold it, and the stories about this are staggering. By the way, this is being done for 10 million people. That's the latest number from the U.S. Citizen and Immigration Service. They completed a record 10 million immigration cases in fiscal 2023. 10 million illegal or 10 million immigrant cases in a single year. And so what do they receive? Well, Gateway Pundit just came out with this crazy list of things illegal immigrants get for free in liberal Massachusetts. A longtime Boston talk show host, Howie Carr, posted this list on his website. Freebies for illegals, a comprehensive list. General welfare costs for illegal immigrants. Free hotel rooms at $150 plus a day in New York. That rises to $300. Three meals a day at $64 per person per diem. Free on-site medical and dental services, including condoms. Special diet for Ramadan. Free same-day dry cleaning with free pickup and delivery. Free housekeeping twice a week. Free cell phone chargers and charging points, ports, free tablets and iPads, free clothing, new and used. Everyone got a free winter coat, gloves, and shoes. You get free toiletries, and for the children, you get free diapers, wipes, diaper pails, cribs, bassinets, playpens, baby bottles, baby formulas, free car seats, free new mother bags, playrooms for young illegals with free toys and books, which must be replaced often because of their destruction, and that's only about half the list, if you can believe it. Don't trust Gateway Pundit? Well, you don't need to. What about Bloomberg? NYC pays over $300 a night for budget hotel rooms for migrants. Because remember, it's not just the fact that migrants are being given everything for free, including luxury hotel rooms in, you know, prime downtown real estate. It's also a method by which, a vector by which the hotel owners in the city can ratchet up prices and squeeze the most out of taxpayers, since they sign these bulk agreements with hotels to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars a day to house illegal migrants, no questions asked. It's not the amount that they could typically charge if they were actually renting hotel rooms to visitors in the typical fashion. A hotel room that maybe would cost $120 a night, they'll charge $300 because it's the government and they'll pay that much. So we're being fleeced at every possible opportunity here. The Holiday Inn in Manhattan's financial district has had a tough few years, shutting twice during the pandemic and struggling with too much debt. But in November, owner Jubao Zi, nice American name, put the 50-story hotel, the world's tallest Holiday Inn, into bankruptcy. But weeks later, New York City Mayor Eric Adams' administration came with a lifeline. It wanted to rent all 492 rooms to house roughly 15,000 migrants over the next 15 months. The hotel typically charging $110 a night, would get 73% more, or $190 a room. Plus, the city would guarantee full occupancy at a time when it is expected to just be 70% full. So they can ratchet up the prices, house the illegal migrants, get the city to pay for it, and it's all coming out of your wallet. Or what about this story from the New York Times? Feds pay for room service, laundry, and babysitters for illegal immigrants kept at hotels. And it, again, just goes on and on. It's all the things that I listed before. And, of course, this is in a couple states where you've got 40,000 homeless residents, including 3,000 veterans. They don't receive much at all from the government, but the illegal immigrants, whose only action in relation to the American nation is to break their laws and come in illegally, and what they receive is daily meals, three daily meals for free. They get new furniture. They get iPads and iPhones. They get childcare completely free. This is more than, I mean, you could work your butt off 5 days a week and not be able to afford this. These people have done no work in America ever, are not working now, and are receiving what would amount to like $500,000 a year in benefits. Again, it's not that I think the government should be providing this for everybody. It's that we live in a societal structure in which I can't afford half of these things on a pretty good salary. We have to struggle to make ends meet and to like find babysitters we can afford and get two jobs. But if we are illegal immigrants, the road would be paved with gold. Your gold. Gold stolen from you. We got a lot of other stuff to cover here, but let's stick on the invasion taking place right now. In the Daily Dispatch, we told you about the illegal immigrant who murdered a 25-year-old woman in Michigan, left her body in a ditch on the side of the road. It's another cost to be paid for the policies of Joe Biden and the Democrats, the open borders, anti-American system. One thing I forgot to tell you is that that man was previously deported by Trump. Brandon Ortiz Vitae was previously arrested and deported to Mexico in 2020, only to return and murder a woman. So again, this is the type of person that should, under any reasonable circumstance, not only never be allowed into this country, should obviously have been flagged by immigration. I mean, maybe he just snuck in. Maybe he was one of the gotaways that we don't hear much about because our attention is taken up by the tens of millions who are turning themselves in to Border Patrol to claim asylum. Of course, sarcastic quotes around all of those words. Maybe he was a gotaway. But more likely, he gave a fake name. There's no system to ensure that the people that we're letting in are who they say they are. No system to make sure they're not somebody who's been arrested and deported just a few years ago. So he gets around, he gets in, he is sent by the American government and the NGOs that we fund with our tax dollars all the way to Michigan, where he murders a woman and destroys the lives of God knows how many of her family and friends who will never get to talk to her or hug her ever again. Just another tragedy to throw on the pile. Of course, when you're talking about costs, there's various ways to look at that when it comes to illegal immigration. Of course, it's hard to look at it when the cities themselves and the money that they're spending on illegal immigrants is completely opaque and not available to public scrutiny. That's what NBC found when it was trying to figure out how much Chicago is spending to shelter illegal immigrants. Let's go to clip number 13 now.
For months, NBC5 Investigates has asked for copies of the leases for the 27 shelters the city operated. Through a series of Freedom of Information Act requests, we've received just 9 agreements. Those missing include lease agreements for the city's largest and most expensive shelters.
You should not have to go through the hoops that you've gone through just to get to partial information.
Joe Ferguson is Chicago's former inspector general. He's now with the Civic Federation, a nonpartisan government research group.
We absolutely should know at every step of the way where the public's money is going to so that we can make an assessment as to whether or not it is being used well.
What we do know after reviewing hundreds of pages of invoices is how millions of dollars have flowed to these companies for the operation and use of the buildings. Take, for example, the city's largest shelter in Pilsen. Housing 2,300 migrants cost city taxpayers $38,000 for a single night. That's $280,000 a week, or more than $2.5 million over the course of 3 months. It was a similar story over at this Ogden shelter. For 3 months, $1.8 million. And at the Inn of Chicago, which at one time provided 1,500 beds, the cost $344,000 a week. If you total that out to a year, it's more than $17 million.
It's tough to say how that money was divided up. Equitable Social Solutions directed our questions back to the city. ReloShare did provide a statement, but it didn't answer any of our questions, and the property owners either didn't return our calls or would not comment. If there are public dollars involved, shouldn't the public know where they flow?
100%.
Alderman Andre Vasquez chairs the city council's migrant committee. He said even aldermen have had a hard time accounting for how these dollars have been spent.
Even the elected representatives don't even know where this money's going. Again, it's one of these things where if you try to fudge 50 cents on your tax return, oh, they'll be breathing down your neck like a dragon. But when it comes to the government, 27 immigrant facilities, I just want to know how much it's being paid for, where the money's actually going, who the contracts are with. These are like key things for the public to know to avoid obvious corruption and the misspending of their money. And just nobody knows. The government themselves don't even know. The alderman in charge of the settlement doesn't know. He has no idea how much we're spending, what we're spending it on, who is approving the funds going to these different companies, who's running the companies. You know, in places like, well, in places all over Europe, recently it was discovered that over half of the companies that were benefiting from the contracts were actually foreign owned. So it's not even like these are American hotel chains that are at least receiving some tangible benefit from being paid millions of dollars to house illegal immigrants. The companies themselves are owned by foreigners. So you've got this well-oiled machine at this point where you've got tax dollars taken from Americans, given to NGOs, given to the UN, who have the refugee resettlement program, who fund the waypoints and the path up to America from all over the world through South America and Central America, all the way through Mexico. They pay for the buses. They even pay for plane tickets to skip the line and just come straight into America. Regardless, it's a taxpayer-funded scheme, taking your money, giving it to NGOs who are funneling people in by the tens of thousands from all over the world. Then they're sent to, you know, migrant staging camps for which the government has dished out billions upon billions of dollars. And then they're sent, again, for your tax dollars, onto planes or buses deeper into the country to cities where they receive free hospital visits, as well as these hotels that are fleecing the government by doubling their prices before signing contracts with the government to house these illegal immigrants, again, on your tax dollars. The companies that are receiving this benefit are, to a large degree, foreign-owned companies, so not even going to American companies, but flowing out into the coffers of foreign actors. And all of this is being taken advantage of by companies like Tyson, but really there's over 400 of them unified under the Tint partnership, who's actually taking advantage and encouraging illegal immigration, because as long as you say you're a refugee or asylum seeker, they'll be happy to hire you to perform a job that an American would perform at a decent wage, but instead they'll pay you almost nothing, but will still pay for your lawyer to argue that you're an asylum seeker to make sure that you're here forever. They'll pay for your rent. They'll give you time off to go to your immigration hearings. They'll pay for your child care and a number of other benefits and perks that, again, are not being received by American citizens applying for those same jobs, which may be a part of why over the last 4 years, hundreds of thousands of jobs have been lost by Native Americans, but millions have been gained by non-Americans. Actually, I think the correct number is 1.4 million jobs lost by American-born workers, with 3 million jobs, new jobs created, but all going exclusively to foreign-born migrants. And the tent partnership as well is something you really need to think about and look at, because it's another example of the workaround, the gray area, the lawful abuse of a system that is designed for openness and permissiveness, because we once had a moral population. You would think that if companies wanted to hire migrants, they would do it legally through the immigration process that does give the ability for American companies to hire hundreds of thousands of migrants from overseas, the H-1B visas or lesser visas where you can hire farm workers or whatever to come work and do it legally as it is. But by taking advantage of the refugee asylum program, it's actually more advantageous for them to bring in illegal immigrants. You know what I'm saying? That they're actually prioritizing and they prefer illegal immigrants, because by claiming that they're asylum seekers or refugees, they get access to a whole host of benefits, which means that companies are not only encouraged to hire foreigners, not from America, to prefer engineers from India over anybody that graduated from an American school. Not only are they encouraged and facilitated in the hiring of non-Americans, they're actually making it more advantageous to hire illegal immigrants than legal immigrants by taking advantage of the refugee and asylum program and the Tent Partnership, which again has over 400 companies involved, and they are the biggest companies in the world, practically all of them. And I did a Twitter short you can see on that where I go through just a few of the companies of the over 400 that are taking advantage and abusing this system in the way that they are. So we don't have to be abused. We don't have to stick with this. We don't have to. We are under no obligation whatsoever to endlessly pay for everything for the entire world. This is ridiculous. It is a scheme to destroy the United States. We have to stop it.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. In the first 5 minutes of this show, we showed you a clip of Jordan Peterson talking to Destiny, of all people, who is probably the most misinformed person who talks on topics he just knows nothing about continuously. He, of course, made the claim that the only example of people saying that the virus or the vaccine stops transmission, it's like one clip of Biden, like that's all, because I guess he thinks we're all stupid. Let's go now to clip number three, where we can see example after example of this claim being made. I hope you didn't forget this because you're not a goldfish. We all know this, right? It's weird that people lie when everybody knows the truth. Let's watch.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin.
You put other people at risk for not getting vaccinated was a 2021 mantra. This was repeated by the CDC.
Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick, and that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real world data.
Corporate media.
Now we know that the vaccines work well enough that the virus stops with every vaccinated person. A vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus. The virus does not infect them. The virus cannot then use that person to go anywhere else. It cannot use a vaccinated person as a host to go get more people.
The president.
You're okay. You're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations.
Billionaires like Bill Gates.
Everyone who takes the vaccine is not just protecting themselves, but reducing their transmission.
Sesame Street.
Kids can also play a role in passing the virus on to others, like siblings and parents and grandparents as well. So, getting kids vaccinated, especially as we go into the colder months here, it's going to be really crucial to protect them as well as the other people in their lives, Granny Bird.
See, my mommy and my papi said that it will help keep me, my friends, my neighbors, my abuela, all healthy.
Your parents are absolutely right.
I learned that Elmo getting vaccinated is the best way to keep himself, our friends, neighbors, and everyone else healthy and enjoying the things they love.
The CEO of Pfizer, Albert Bourla.
The decision not to vaccinate will not affect only your health or your life. Unfortunately, it will affect the lives of others and likely the lives of the people you love the most.
And medical professionals like Fauci.
When you get vaccinated, you not only protect your own health, that of the family, but also you contribute to the community health by preventing the spread of the virus throughout the community. In other words, you become a dead end to the virus.
This was the grounds for talks of vaccine passports, which came to fruition in places like New York, where businesses were required to ask for your vaccine papers. The idea that the United States would implement a two-tier system where we share our medical information with the government, who in tandem with corporations would decide how you could travel, became the talking point, even going as far as saying the unvaccinated should be outcast and left to die.
Don't get the vaccine, you can't go to the supermarket. Don't have the vaccine, you should, can't go to the ball game. Don't have the vaccine, can't go to work. You don't have the vaccine, can't come here. No shirt, no shoes, no service.
Dr. Fauci said that if hospitals get any more overcrowded, they're going to have to make some very tough choices about who gets an ICU bed. That choice doesn't seem so tough to me. Vaccinated person having a heart attack? Yes, come right on in. We'll take care of you. Unvaccinated guy who gobbled horse goo? Rest in peace, Wheezy.
When are we going to stop putting up with the idiots in this country and just say, you now, it's mandatory to get vaccinated? Them, their freedom. I want my freedom to live.
People who refuse to accept vaccines, I think the right response for them is not to force them to, but rather to insist that they be isolated.
If you're willing to walk among us unvaccinated, you are an enemy.
This was all based on there being no breakthrough cases.
The idea of checking if people are vaccinated, you know, if you have breakthrough infections, what's the point?
A member of the European Parliament.
Very powerful Rob video Bruce. By Andrew Wintzell. Andrew Wintzell made that, and really excellent work. And of course, I remember all of that. I don't know. People want to act like that didn't happen. Just understand that it had, in reality, nothing to do with the vaccine. They're applying that same level of logic to anybody who distrusts the government at this point. It's about not listening to your superiors. I'll go ahead and open up the phone lines. We'll only be able to take your calls this hour because in the third hour, we're welcoming a couple guests. First, Henry Facey at Info Uncensored. Talk about the incredible experience he's had and the incredible waves he's made capturing behind-the-scenes clandestine footage of migrant camps in New York. And then we'll be joined by Clint Russell of Liberty Lockdown after him. So we'll go ahead and open up the phone lines for your calls this hour. 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. Operators now on call. But we still have just so much to talk about, including a lot of videos to play. And I don't want to just retread the first hour, but we are taking a similar path. Because in the first hour we showed the argument between Jordan and Destiny, where Destiny claimed that the only person to ever claim that the vaccine stopped transmission was Joe Biden one time. And it's just like, okay, that's retarded. So in the first 5 minutes of this hour, we showed the reality of what we all remember and know to be true. And then in the first hour, I got into sort of the idea that Florida, as well as some other states, are doing a great job at defending themselves against these bizarre, novel, new anti-human programs, things like lab-grown meat that Florida just says, nope, you're not allowed to. Chemtrails, Tennessee says, no, you can't spray particles into the air. No, you just can't do that here, which is a really interesting one. And maybe we need to get into the Tennessee one. But I also noted that it's a losing proposition to constantly be playing defense, constantly be trying futilely to stop what's already happening from happening. I don't want to be a downer or say like there's no point in doing this. Obviously, there is a point, and it's good that states are taking the initiative and banning things like lab-grown meat, or in the case of Texas, doing our own border patrol system where we are arresting and deporting illegal immigrants. But there's a fatal flaw in this tactic, and that is that the methods of the globalists are not unipolar. It's a multifaceted attack at every different level. And here's a good example of this. From Leading Report, Louisiana Senate has passed a bill 37-0 to not allow any rule, regulation, fee, tax, policy, or mandate of any kind from the WHO, UN, or World Economic Forum to be enforced or implemented by the state of Louisiana or any agency. Okay, so, you know, round of applause for Louisiana. This is a great thing to do. How thoroughly will it be implemented, though? How do you even define, you know, what these laws or rules are? Because in this phase that we're in of universal conspiracy, open conspiracy, fractal conspiracy, where it's happening at every level, not even secretive, but out in the open, how do you deal with what in reality is taking us over, which is an ideology, which is a mindset and a theory of life that is at odds with the way the world was before? How do you stop? I mean, you can stop the World Economic Forum from imposing things, but they don't impose things. They just dictate to their adherents what they need to do in their personal life. And so the adherent's not going to say, well, the World Economic Forum told me I need to do this. They're going to take it in. They're going to, you know, absorb the policy and then present it as if it's their own thought. So how do you prevent that? As an example, in Louisiana. So Louisiana passes this bill, again, to, quote, not allow any rule, regulation, fee, tax, policy, or mandate of any kind from the WHO, UN, or World Economic Forum to be enforced or implemented by the state of Louisiana or any agency. Well, what about the C40 cities agreement? C40, of course, we've covered ad nauseum, but in case you're not aware, C40 is a global network of mayors of the world's leading cities that are united in action to confront the climate crisis. And this is where you've got proposals and policies that say they will either forcibly or by just making, you know, taking over the industry and making it impossible to do otherwise, they'll force you to no longer be able to buy clothes and not be able to take more than one short-haul flight every 3 years, not own a car, not have even access to public transportation, to have 15-minute cities and have to ask permission to leave your neighborhood. This is like the most extreme of some of the globalist so-called climate change, the policies predicated on climate change that are meant to destroy the Western way of life, the idea of property and ownership, the idea of freedom and liberality, to be replaced with a neo-feudal, neo-fascist total takeover. And it's doing it at the city level. So, you know, New Orleans right now is one of those C40 cities. New Orleans, Louisiana has been a member of the C40 organization since 2006. So I wonder, will the people that run this C40 program, will they be ousted from New Orleans? Will it be demanded that these policies that are put into place completely in line with the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the UN, and all these others, but it's not technically front, it's the C40 cities program. So do we have to go through and name every single organization? Because there's tens of thousands of these organizations, all working in tandem, all working hand in hand to impose this stuff on you. So I'm not even really sure what the solution to this is, but obviously passing things like Louisiana passed is not enough. It's clearly not enough because they'll find workarounds. They'll impose this anyway. They don't have to say this comes from the World Economic Forum or this comes from the World Health Organization, but it does. At the end of the day, it's these same people implementing these same policies. So how do you enforce through the government people not, you know, how do you prevent people from doing this? I don't really know. I honestly am not really sure. But obviously, you know, the city of New Orleans is tied in with the C40 system. And this is just the first one I looked up because I assumed that you'd probably have New Orleans in this agreement. And of course, I was right. And it's being implemented. So I wonder, will the C40 organization be kicked out of New Orleans? Probably not, because it doesn't technically fall into the categories that were listed by the bill banning the World Economic Forum, the WHO, and the UN from affecting public policy in Louisiana. So it needs to be more thorough, I guess, is the point. It needs to be more overarching and extreme, really, the legislation that is attempting to put an end to this sort of stuff. We need to treat this like the religious phenomenon it is, and either exclude it from any government participation on the basis of the fact that it's a religion, and basically anything that they attempt at any level to, you know, drive towards the destruction of private ownership or contributing to the depopulation agenda, it needs to be shut down as if, you know, you've got cities trying to, if you had a city trying to implement a school curriculum that had, you know, pledging allegiance to the Pope of Rome in it, like, that would never pass. That just wouldn't happen because it's a religious institution and there's separation of church and state. If you treat the depopulation suicide cult as a religion, maybe that would be one way to go about it. But there has to be a more all-encompassing, more thorough, more holistic approach to stopping these organizations and these people, these policies, from weeding their way into your life at every possible level. You can't just do it by banning certain bodies or certain organizations because they've got 10,000 of them. You've got to ban the ideas themselves, which I don't even think the government should be in charge of banning ideas. But right now, the government is in the position of supporting, pushing, promoting, and in many cases, legally enshrining these ideas. So the first thing to do would be stop doing that. And then if we have to take extreme measures to protect our way of life, our people, our nation, our entire social construct, then I think it may be a necessary role of the government to play. But that's just me. We have a lot of videos and a lot of new information about what's gone on with the Baltimore Bridge collapse. One interesting thing in all of this is that you've got, you know, mainstream media outlets, NBC, CNN, you know, most of the big ones that put out a story along the lines of this, like Axios, how Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse became a target of conspiracy theories. You're not allowed to speculate. You're not allowed to wonder. I mean, they don't have an official answer as of now. So again, this sort of goes back to what we were talking about yesterday with Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, where she goes missing for 3 months and they say it's a conspiracy theory to wonder why. It's a similar thing. We don't have an official story. There's no actual statement saying here's what happened and here's why. But they don't want you speculating in any manner or form. Here's the problem with that. This condemnation of conspiracy theories, these people telling us, shut up, it wasn't a cyber attack. There's no way that the ship was hacked. There's no way this was on purpose. They're also the ones, like the World Economic Forum, who have been telling us for the last couple of years that cyber attacks are imminent, that the future of warfare is cyber. They're the ones who are perfectly aware that World War III will look like this. This is what World War III will look like. It's not going to be armies marching against armies. It's not going to be, at least in America, big, you know, bombing raids from squadrons stationed on aircraft carriers off the coast. It's going to look like hacking into the infrastructure and collapsing it from the inside. So why shouldn't we speculate? And isn't this exactly what these people have been warning us about the entire time? Isn't this why they've been making such a big deal out of cyber attacks and cybersecurity and the future of warfare being in cyberspace? This is what warfare will look like in the future. Whether or not this particular event was a hack attack or was a cyber attack of some sort that led to this major, major collapse of American infrastructure, or whether it was just a big accident, doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. I mean, we can't say one way or another at this point. So why you're condemning one speculation but not the other, I mean, that just doesn't make sense on the face of it. But this is what war will look like in the future, and they're the ones who have been telling us this. In fact, a movie produced by Barack Obama about a civil war begins with a cyber attack and a shipping container being hacked and driving itself onto the beach. We have a video of this from, I think it's clip number 14. Let's go to clip number 14 here as this Twitter and TikTok user breaks it down.
Have you seen the Obama movie, Leave the World Behind? Many have called it predictive programming. Well, the action of the movie starts when a giant container ship loses power and crashes. Interesting enough, last night, a giant container ship lost power and crashed into a bridge in Baltimore. In the movie, we find out that it was a cyber attack. Today, we are being told that the Baltimore bridge crash is just an accident. But there is clear video of the ship losing power twice, taking a sharp turn and running straight into the bridge support structure. All remaining ships are rerouted to other ports, and our U.S. trade lines and logistics are disrupted. If I were a conspiracy theorist, I would say it looks like a cyber attack. Joe Biden just announced in his press conference that the federal government will pay for the rebuilding of the bridge. The people of Baltimore need us right now. Less than 12 hours after the bridge goes down, Biden is committing 100% to the rebuilding of said bridge and necessary infrastructure. Where was his diligence and vigor when Texas burned, when Lahaina burned? Bridges collapsing, trains derailing, YouTube and Meta go down on Super Tuesday, AT&T suffers nationwide blackouts, casinos get hacked, fighter jets go missing, GOP House members just start randomly quitting. To top it off, slowly hiding away in the news cycle is Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, just Diddy. His houses get raided by Homeland Security for sex trafficking. Countless lawsuits over the last 6 months leading to a raid of multiple properties. A coordinated national effort like this for a major household name indicates they have a lot of real evidence against Diddy. Take that, take that. People are calling him the Black Epstein. Blackstein. Interesting enough, flight logs show his private jet leaving the country. You would think that if they're doing a national raid on his properties, they had his whereabouts also. Did he escape or did they let him leave? Or even wilder, did they capture him in private and make it seem like he escaped? Is someone out there doing a power flex right now, showing their reach, making examples? Something bigger is happening. What are they trying to hide?
So that's from Matt Kim. He's a user named Matt Kim at MattAttack009_ on X. And he's very good at what he does. And of course, you know, while we're on the topic of Diddy, since he did mention it, even though he mentioned it as a distraction, I do want to mention, Diddy's plane flew to a Caribbean island. He was not on it, but I wonder what was. I wonder what blackmail he's now storing safely out of reach of American authorities. That is an interesting piece of speculation. And of course, it's not Diddy. It's not Diddy, just like it's not Hillary Clinton. They're a part of massive criminal enterprises, mafias, that have hundreds of members, of which they are simply the public face, just so you're aware. But getting back to, you know, the future of warfare and the way in which this is how it's going to look from now on, and we've shown you examples in the past of times when Russia has gotten access to dams in America and could easily flood entire cities or destroy the electrical output that millions of people rely on, or shut down infrastructure to stop the flow of goods in and out of the country. It's extremely vulnerable, our infrastructure, to cyber attack. And when it happens, when the cyber attack comes, it's going to look like accidents. It's going to look like bridges collapsing and boats running into things and trains going off the track. It's going to look like dams breaking open and water spilling out. I mean, it's going to look like accidents. So what and how should we tell the difference? And this is sort of the all-encompassing aspect of where we're headed as a nation, or really a world. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it's incompetence or an attack. The outcome is the same. The perpetrators are the same. So it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter whether it's an attack or an accident. It's warfare regardless. What we know about this is the pilot of the ship said he did everything he could have done. So I guess it was a male that was driving it. Despite the fact that some online publications show that it's the first woman captain of these ships, that the worst first woman pilot. Regardless, the crew warned of power issues before it collided with the Baltimore Bridge. Six people remain missing. Just minutes before the bridge, there was a total blackout on the ship, meaning the ship lost engine power and electric power. It was a complete blackout. The pilot didn't, quote, did everything he could have done to both slow the ship down and keep it from drifting to the right towards the bridge. The pilot quickly gave a string of orders, calling for a hard rudder to port as far left as possible and for an anchor to be dropped. Video of the 95,000 gross ton ship approaching the bridge shows lights on the vessels going off and turning back on, likely due to an emergency generator activating after the initial blackout. But the ship's engines never got running again, according to Diamond. Yeah, that could have easily been a cyber attack. Till we learn otherwise, there's no point in pretending that that's an impossibility. And clip number one, I thought actually was just something good to look to because it's the video of the ship hitting the bridge, but at 8 times speed. Obviously, these ships move incredibly slowly. Any change in direction or stopping and starting is a long and thorough process. Let's go to clip number one here. This is the 8 times speed clip. And when you do it at 8 times speed, it looks like the ship turns deliberately towards the bridge. So I don't know what he's talking about, hard to port, when they're clearly wrenching hard to starboard. So that's a little odd. Now, people speculating that hard turn could have been the result of a anchor being dropped. Regardless, it looks awfully suspicious. But again, the mainstream media is there to tell you, do not speculate, do not wonder, do not question. Trust the authorities who have routinely lied to you time and time again over the past few years. Let's hear from, this is from Edward Zoll. This is a post he did called Baltimore Bridge Truth. I think it does a good job of laying out, again, how whether it was an accident or an attack really doesn't matter. Both of these are just various functions of the war that it's really being waged against us right now. He says the shocking conclusion that brought down the shocking collision that brought down the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore was not a terrorist attack nor a hack. It was, however, a striking example of the severe shortage of skilled labor in nationally critical industries which run our country. We can't seem to keep planes, trains, and boats in good working order anymore. The news lied about the event by intentionally speeding the video of the collision up and then reframing from providing proper context. The Dolly cargo ship was moving at 3 to 6 knots in the harbor, and at that speed, it takes 20 minutes to go a mile. That's how slow the ship was moving when it hit the support column of the bridge. In order to catch people's attention and show the full extent of the approach of the ship to the bridge, the news agencies greatly spread up the video. That's evidenced by seeing the speed of the cars going across the 3-mile bridge. It actually took 25 minutes, not 54 seconds, for the ship to reach the bridge. Look at the date and time info on the video to see that. But most people didn't realize they were watching an edited video and fairly assumed that they were watching a kamikaze attack or an unnatural hijacking. The power outage was due to a known maintenance issue, which was going to be addressed at their next port call and hadn't been addressed yet due to lack of skilled labor available. Cargo ships do everything slowly, from steering to stopping, and the ship actually did drop its anchor and radio to Mayday, which led to police shutting down the bridge prior to impact and hundreds of lives being saved. Another unreported miracle that occurred was that the ship captain dropped anchor and somehow missed the nest cables and oil pipelines sitting in Baltimore Bay. He could have easily taken out half the Eastern Seaboard's internet if he caught the wrong line and caused a Nord Stream 2-style pipeline catastrophe. Our system is indeed fragile. A skeleton crew of soon-to-be-retired Westerners stand between nationwide blackouts and debilitating supply shortages. No amount of inexperienced foreigners or feel-good hiring policies will solve this. We have to be the best again to operate complex systems which don't get people killed. Until then, the bridge collapse is but the beginning of a vicious cycle of propaganda and decay, which has become the norm in the Third World. I think he's exactly right about that. I'm still not willing to completely cut out the possibility of a cyber attack. But I think even without the cyber attack, you have to realize that this is still a form of attack against our system, a form of long-term psychological, physical, social, and demographic warfare against the United States. And we're going to start seeing stuff like this a lot more. And in a world of great uncertainty and cyber attacks, it will be impossible to know whether it's an accident or deliberate. All right, folks, I want to go out to your phone calls now. We've got a couple callers about the bridge, and we'll move on to a different topic. But let's go first to Tony in Texas, what the bridge and ship symbolize. Go ahead, Tony, you're on the air.
Yeah, you know what that ship and bridge symbolize? Well, the ship is Joe Biden and the Democrat Party, and the bridge is America. Our infrastructure in this country is collapsing just as fast as that bridge. I mean, look here in the state of Texas. Texas used to grow a lot of rice. We don't anymore because they don't maintain the rice canals and they don't give the rice farmers any water. And rice is a huge staple food, but now all the government allows them to do is grow corn for fuel and cattle feed.
Right. Yeah, and that connects to the next topic that we're going to cover, because we're going to get into the war on food. Believe it or not, there is a war against food happening. But it's sort of the perfect example of America's priorities, really. And since we're on the topic, what is the Biden administration focusing on? I mean, they've got an infrastructure wing of the government. They should be focusing on stuff like this. Ironically, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of bridges in America that are overdue to be replaced. Like, this is going to start happening more and more as we fail to uphold our basic infrastructure. Maybe this is just the way you get them replaced. Maybe you've got some bridge that's 70 years old and is falling apart and the government won't do anything about it. Hey, drive a ship into it. They'll fix it. They'll fix it if you just collapse the whole thing. I'm kidding, of course. But let's hear what the Biden administration is focusing on, as they're the ones in charge of spending our money to uphold our infrastructure. Clip number 15 is Pete Buttigieg, the deputy whatever of transportation, talking about what he's prioritizing.
If an underpass was constructed such that a bus carrying mostly Black and Puerto Rican kids to a beach, or it would have been, in New York, was designed too low for it to pass by, but that obviously reflects racism that went into those design choices. I don't think we have anything to lose by confronting that simple reality, and I think we have everything to gain by acknowledging it and then dealing with it, which is why the Reconnecting Communities, that $1 billion, is something we want to get to work right away.
Mm. Yeah, spending $1 billion to fight racist underpasses. That's where their priorities are. He's like, there's no harm in focusing on this and you know, identifying this. It's like, well, when you've got massive infrastructure problems, from airplanes to bridges to boats and trains falling off the track and poisoning entire states, maybe your priorities are wrong. Maybe there is actually harm that comes from prioritizing these ridiculous race-baiting narratives over the actual job you're supposed to be doing. But hey, that's just me. I'm not a gay mayor, so what do I know? Let's go to the next call. We've got Ralph in Argyle, Texas. You have a take on the bridge collapse. Go ahead, Ralph. You're on the air.
Thanks so much. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thanks for calling in.
Well, for the last 35 years, I've had a chemical manufacturing company that we cater exclusively to the global maritime industry, and this involves fuels of dual additives. And I can pretty much assuredly tell you what I think the cause was of the situation. I think it's a fuel-related issue. Mm-hmm. And in the overview, you can actually trace it back to the United Nations, and I'll tell you why. So what the UN did back in 2015 and later in 2020, they came up with new standards for fuel for these ships. The first standard was limiting these ships to a 0.5% sulfur level. It used to be 2 and 3 and 4 and 5%. And then in what they call an emissions control area, ECA, which is around the coastal areas of the Baltic in North America, they went down to 0.1% sulfur. Now, the problem there is that these ships are not designed to handle these low sulfur fuels. The equipment, these are high-pressure injection systems, high-pressure pumps, and the like. And so what they have to do is put in a lubricity additive in those fuels to make them so that the pumps don't fail, including all the fuel injection equipment, everything that's responsible for keeping that ship going. So most operators do this. So that's one of the first issues right there I would look at. I would have that fuel tested for its lubricity. There's a test you can run on that to see. If it's got poor lubricity, those pumps will fail immediately. And that I've seen this happen time and time again offshore where ships have lost power at sea. It also lost power during maneuvering operations going into port. It happens more often than you might think. I get one or two calls a week from companies that have had this experience out there in the open ocean. The second thing is there's a big issue now with the way these fuels are made. These fuels are typically blended fuels. Nobody actually makes a 0.1% sulfur fuel. They have to be blended down with ultra-low sulfur diesel and maybe a higher lower-level diesel. They blend them. And when you blend fuels, it's kind of dangerous because each fuel will have certain chemical precursors that alone are not problematic. But when you combine them, they react and cause problems. It could be stratification. It could be poor stability, sludge production, that kind of thing. But the biggest thing lately has been chemical contamination of these fuels. What happens is when a charterer is going out there seeking a bid on fuels, there'll be maybe five or six fuel suppliers at a certain port. And they'll come in, and the lowest price will typically get it. Well, in order to keep their fuels cheap, what they do is they adulterate these fuels, sometimes with chemical waste. Happens a lot. I get two or three of these a week. And you could, this happened actually in 2018 in Houston, where the fuels coming out of Houston were adulterated with phenols, which are not natural to the fuel. And there were 150 ships that more or less were disabled in the period of about 3 months in the Gulf of Mexico. It's not uncommon. I see it because we have 100,000 ships worldwide. I see it all the time. And we sell our products worldwide. I have warehouses in 9 countries. So I get reports sent all the time from our various companies that we sell to. We sell to about 120 different companies. So you get these chemical contaminations, and these phenols will clump together. And the minute they hit the suction line, your fuel pumps are dead. Done. I see a lot of ships with plastic in it, styrene, endings, DCPD. And the standard that they use to test fuels is under what they call ISO 8217. It's a very basic standard, but it does not look for those chemicals. So if you have a problem, what you have to do is get your retained fuel sample and run it through a lab afterwards to see what's in that fuel to cause those pumps to fail. It can be a lubricity issue or a chemical contamination issue, and it's not uncommon. It really isn't. So the one thing that really clues me in on this particular one, big container ships like this bear ship, these box ships, typically have one single two-stroke diesel engine, anywhere from 30,000 to 80,000 horsepower, depending on the size of the ship. It runs out the fuel. And then it will have typically three generators, backups, four-stroke engines for all their electrical power and other systems on the ship. At any given time on that vessel, two of those three engines will be operating when the main engine is operating. So they have a backup. And the problem is it's unifuel. They all use the same fuel. So what gave me a clue on this is when those generators failed and went dark a couple of different times. That told me that they're not operating on separate fuels, the same fuel. That tells me it's a fuel issue. It's got to be a fuel issue.
See,
it's pretty much going to be it.
These are my favorite types of calls that we get. I love this when experts call in with their information about stuff they do in their lives that you don't find in the media. So I had not even heard that. So a contaminated fuel or perhaps just the sort of continual wear and tear of using these low sulfur fuels explains to you everything that we're seeing in the video of the ship: the power going out, the generator failing, the lack of steering or inappropriate steering. All of that is explained to you by this one issue, which you've seen over and over out at sea. It's just a lot more dangerous when it's in harbor. But the same thing happens out at sea when these fuels fail.
It's not uncommon. We get two or three calls a week where this happens. And we get chief engineers calling us or emailing us, what do we do? And we give instructions on what to do, how to resolve the issue. And there's ways you can solve those issues. It takes a little work, but it can be done. But in the case of low lubricity fuels, way back when California instituted the low sulfur fuel back, I think it was 1998 or 2000, whatever. And immediately after that fuel regulation was implemented, the newsreels the next day were trucks disabled on the highway, hundreds of them.
Fascinating.
Nobody thought of the fact that you need lubrication power in the field. You don't have that.
That's incredible information. Thank you for that call, Ralph. We got to go to break, but that is an angle I had not heard, but it makes a heck of a lot of sense to me. Thanks, UN. I'm going to talk a little bit about Israel in this second before going back out to your phone calls. We've got guests throughout the third hour, although I am going to play some videos in the first 5 minutes that you are going to want to pay attention to. But I know that when there's a major event like the collapsing of the bridge in Baltimore, we get a lot of people tuning in to InfoWars for the first time, or they only tune in when there's some big event like this because they know that they're not going to get the full story from the MSM. They'll get official talking points and they'll get, you know, nagging about how dare you think about this for yourself. And maybe you've been taught to expect that InfoWars would be spinning wild conspiracy theories without any basis in evidence. I hope if that is the case and you are tuning in for the first time, you realize what we're really all about, which is entertaining all possibilities, seeing how this fits into the global trend, global trends that are pushing us more and more towards a global one world government, deliberately collapsing the United States. What we talk about is reality and facts and the truth, and we debunk MSM talking points more than we come up with talking points of our own. And when it comes to major disasters like this in America, we take on the position that journalism itself is supposed to take on, that the MSM, the obligation that they have given up recently of actually investigating this stuff and looking at things from all angles and questioning the official stories for the sake of questioning it. Maybe they're right, but if you question it and they're right, then you'll come to the conclusion that they're right. There's nothing wrong with questioning these things. And so if you are here for the first time, welcome. We're not the people that you may have been told that we are. And our main philosophy involves defeating the worldwide push of the elimination of human liberty, the indoctrination of humankind into a subservient role of a corporate, unelected global government. And we fight these things on two fronts. One, by organizing and petitioning and using our political rights to change things on a macro level, but also telling you how to defend yourself on a personal level. So a classic example would be like, we need laws against fluoride in the water. We need laws against chemicals and atrazine and pesticides and plastics and PFAS, things that we've been advocating for decades that the mainstream media is finally coming around to admitting is real. We should be making laws and having collective action against these things. But until that happens, and as we work on that, you need to be protecting yourself by filtering your water or taking supplements to counteract the negative effects of the hormone-altering chemicals that are besetting you from your food, water, air, and everywhere else that they can attack you from. So we are completely supporter-funded. We are completely listener-funded. We do not have advertisers outside of InfoWarsStore.com, and InfoWarsStore.com is primarily stocked with proprietary supplements and vitamins and minerals and all sorts of wonderful things that can actually tangibly, literally help you to fight back against the poison that is attacking us from all sides. Survivor Shield X3 is on sale and back in stock. If you've never looked into this stuff before, you need to search iodine. Search iodine in scientific literature. Search iodine in news reports over the last several decades, last century, really. The importance of iodine cannot be overstated, and you are not getting it from the food that you eat as you used to, because iodine would be in the food that you eat because it came from the soil. Well, the soil's been denuded. You're not getting it that way. You've got to get it some other way. Survival Shield X3 is possibly the best way to get it available on the market anywhere, and it's available only at InfoWarsStore.com, and it's 40% off. So this is the philosophy of InfoWars. We are dedicated to the truth above all else, and we will speculate and question and wonder and open our lines up to all and any speculation, because that's what's necessary to get to the truth. And so I'm glad that you're here with us, engaged in this attempt to wring out reality from the unreality that is constantly portrayed in mainstream media. InfoWarsStore.com is the only way to get – it's the only way we get support. It's the only way to support us, and it is a very effective way of doing that micro defense in addition to the macro defense that we encourage you do by organizing, volunteering for political action and running for office yourself or whatever you can do to make an impact, because us unified and working together overwhelms the globalists instantaneously if we were to put it into action. So thank you for being here, and I hope that you do support us in this mission. Before I go out to phone calls, I do want to cover what's going on in Israel. Israel has unleashed a major, several major airstrikes in Syria and deep inside Lebanon. The IDF confirmed on Tuesday another rare strike conducted deep into Lebanese territory. The strikes targeted a military compound used by Hezbollah's aerial unit in the Baalbek district, which is in the northeast of the country. This marks the deepest Israeli strike inside Lebanon since the war began in the wake of October 7th Hamas terror attack at more than 110 kilometers from Israel's border. The extent of casualties or damage remain unclear, but it follows a similar February strike in the Beka Valley, more than 100 kilometers from the Israeli border. Hezbollah is, of course, remains the primary threat to Israel. And should America not get involved on the side of Israel, Hezbollah would be, and still, even if we do get involved, still represent an existential threat to the state of Israel. 76 have been killed in Israeli attacks in the last 24 hours. Attacks continue and the situation on the ground remains dire despite a UN Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza during Ramadan. Hezbollah has launched dozens of rockets at the Israeli border town of Kiryat Shmona in response to Israeli strikes on Lebanese southern village that killed seven people. Israel is placing an array of obstacles on aid to Gaza, and the attack on Rafah seems to be going ahead despite warnings from everybody else in the world that what they were doing amounted to genocide and that the people in Rafah were refugees who could not, in any understanding of the conflict, be represented as legitimate targets for military operations. Trump tells Israel it made a, quote, big mistake, and that's losing a lot of support and has to wrap up its war in Gaza before its reputation declines any further. The comment represents a rare moment of criticism of the Jewish state by Trump. However, doesn't go quite far enough, in my opinion. UN experts' report accuses Israel of committing genocide in Gaza. The expert is not the first to warn that Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians. Scholars and states, including a case brought by South Africa in December, have warned that offensive acts carried out by Israel in their war against Hamas have amounted to acts of genocide against civilians in the Gaza Strip, which, of course, it does. And, of course, that UN resolution demanding a Gaza ceasefire has been largely ignored. The only outcome of that has been for Israel to cancel its meeting in America in Washington, D.C. about Rafah, where American politicians are essentially begging Israel not to continue on their genocide. And Israel's decided, well, if you don't veto the ceasefire, like we have done routinely over the last several months, if we don't do that, then they're just going to continue in their murderous campaign of bombing there in Rafah, as they did last night. Finally, we have this from Information Liberation. New York Times debunks own Hamas mass rape hoax, admits key witnesses fabricated rape claims. So New York Times, Israeli soldiers' video undercuts medics' account of sexual assault. Now, the New York Times was the primary perpetrator of this hoax. They are the ones that published an extensive article talking about mass rapes that occurred on October 7th. Only now they're admitting that that never actually happened. That's important, particularly because this report by the Gray Zone, leaked Israel lobby presentation, urges U.S. officials to justify war on Gaza with Hamas rape claims. So these were slides from a confidential Israel lobby presentation. And it has, as well as dictating the language to be used when discussing the war with Hamas in order to most effectively emotionally blackmail America into getting into this war. It also lists raped civilians as a primary motivator for the war with Hamas. Data like this apparently influenced the Israeli government to launch an obsessive but still unsuccessful campaign to prove that Hamas carried out sexual assault on a systematic basis on October 7th. But a March 5th report by UN Special Representative on Sexual Violence, Pramila Patten, claimed that there was evidence, but then didn't actually present any. It did not contain one direct testimony of sexual assault on October 7th. What's more, Patten's team said they found no digital evidence specifically depicting acts of sexual violence. So again, the mass rape claim about Hamas raping Israelis was completely fabricated, no evidence for it ever. And yet, it was one of the primary motivators being used to continue to support for America to continue to support Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. So once again, as we have been for the last, well, my entire life, we are once again being lied into a war on false pretenses. Iraq, Afghanistan, Gaza, Ukraine, it's all complete lies because the American people don't want war. So you have to make up and fabricate brutal, horrific events that they've been doing since World War I. This is not a new phenomenon, by the way. Germans never actually put Belgian babies on bayonets, but that was the lie that helped us, you know, get into World War I. This is just the newest iteration. When will we learn not to trust the people that want us to go to war? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be joined by Info Uncensored Henry Facey here in just a second with some brand new breaking video that he actually had to sacrifice his own health for. He was actually sent to the hospital because of this video. We'll talk to him about what that experience is like and how his videos have helped to reframe the conversation about immigration as they've gone viral, being retweeted by some very, very big accounts over the last few weeks. Before we do that, I want to go to this video because I think it's hugely important. We touched on it a little bit yesterday. It is the scheme by Oregon, and this is just one in a series of schemes, and this is the problem, right, is that there's a literal war on food happening across the world right now where the World Economic Forum, under the guise of climate change, are forcibly shutting down food production and creating the circumstances by which famine is an inevitability. And it's happening all over the place in a million different ways. And so yesterday we covered like five or six different ways that this was all happening, which means we weren't able to focus on one of the primary methods by which they are carrying this out, which is first being rolled out in Oregon as a test case before it's rolled out across the rest of America. I want to go to this video of a small, you know, homestead farmer in New York, in Oregon, rather, talking about how Oregon is shutting down family farms. This is coming to a town near you if we don't stop it in its nascent form. Let's go to clip number 12.
Okay, guys, I had to stop what I was doing to share this with you guys because this is crazy. Right now, the state of Oregon is shutting down small family farms en masse under the guise of water conservation. Oregon lawmakers are rewording their laws to effectively treat small local farms the same as like a large farming operation on a commercial scale. And let me tell you the scariest part, because I've talked about this on my page before. The way they are finding these farms is they are using satellite imagery to pinpoint your farm and send you a cease and desist letter and insisting that you stop all production. Their government has also set up a hotline so that your neighbors can call and rat on you for watering the vegetables and fruit that you're going to go sell at the farmer's market next weekend. Now, I can make a follow-up video going over detail about these laws that they are abusing, as well as the lawsuits that farmers are filing to fight back. But in the meantime, I want you to watch this video. Go to Yanasa TV on the YTube, his episode from 7 days ago. I'll put it down in the description below. He did a fantastic job of doing a deep dive into this issue. This might be Oregon right now, but I promise you, if they get away with this, other states will adopt these same laws. Stay informed, friends. Know who you're voting into office and know whose best interest they have at heart.
And it's obviously not ours. So again, I don't know how you defeat this comprehensively, because any way that you stop their actions, they're just going to find another way around. They're going to say it's water conservation, and they're going to say it's environmental protection of some endangered species, or they'll say it's climate change, or they'll say it's white supremacy to be a farmer. Like, whatever it is, they have goals that are completely and utterly divorced from the excuses they're using to implement these policies. They don't care about water conservation. They don't want you growing food. It's why they have articles coming out that came out this year saying your small farm growing a tomato in your backyard is worse for the environment than shipping one across the Pacific Ocean. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. So, but, and this is what I meant when I was talking in the beginning about just like, I wish I could just broadcast the brain waves as I'm looking at all of these. Because there's all these connections. When you see a story about small farms are worse for the environment because they produce more carbon, small farmers being taken out in Oregon because of water conservation, farmer protests in Europe being shut down forcibly by the police as they're using nitrogen or pesticides or whatever it is as the excuse in that case to shut down farms, it becomes obvious. It becomes undeniable. It becomes a ridiculous thing to refuse to notice the fact that they're just going after farms. They're just trying to shut down your ability to create food. Why would they want to shut down your ability to create food? Because they want to control at a top-down level everything that you need to survive so that you are under their absolute control. They don't want you independent in any way at all. And if you thought I got sick because you got because you didn't get vaccinated was bad, we're entering into I'm starving because you have food territory. And that's exactly where they want us. We'll be right back with Henry Facey. I'm very happy to welcome my guest Henry Facey at Info Uncensored on X, formerly Twitter, at Info Uncensored. Henry, you first came on with us, must have been a month ago, about some incredible footage you got by running past the security guards at a New York holding facility for migrants, getting really incredible footage. Since then, I've seen you go viral multiple times, seeing giant accounts like Wall Street Silver retweeting your footage. You're getting more and more great stuff. Welcome back to the show and great work on all of this, Henry.
Me back, sir.
Well, my pleasure. And of course, you've been doing great work. You just dropped a video. It says sneaking inside the Melnia A. Cass Arena in Roxbury, Boston, Massachusetts. How do you want to do this? You want to play this video and narrate it? You want to tell us how you got this? Because we have the video here and I want to play it. But why don't you set it up for us? What is this video?
Well, I'll just say the beginning part, there's not a lot of audio. It's mostly like a B-roll thing, an entrance. I'm going in, I'm showing it, and I'm doing what I like to call, you'll see in the video, but I like to call my Roosevelt Hotel entrance. And but I do it and I show it, and then there's quite a few details in there before I talk a little bit in there just to validate. First off, it's me, but you'll see me in there. But also for the fact that yeah, something's going on. So for the first part here, I suppose I'll just commentate. So right here, you could see that's a sign on the front door. There's a guard there, and that guy just showed his ID. He's probably Haitian. There's a Haitian woman with a child. I sneak right past another guard right here. This is what I call the Roosevelt Hotel technique. That's exactly what I did at the back of the Roosevelt Hotel when I went into the intake room. American Red Cross. I mean, you got to be kidding me. They're everywhere. Haitian child with an iPad. I mean, wow. This stuff is insane. And you tweeted about this, Harrison, yesterday, the day before last. Now, this is the craziest part, the irony. Illegal black children get to use this African-American community rec center in Boston instead of these people in the area. And I just think the illegal people that get to use this, I mean, it's, I mean, they're making it a racial thing. So here we go. This is where I start talking. I want to cut the audio here and just let it go.
I'm here. You're not going to get this anywhere else.
Running through the gym now.
Oh. I have no idea what the hell. Well, I do. I mean, at this point, I do. But I'm just wondering about my head.
Wow. So now you're in an crazy ambulance, driving away.
Yeah.
So what happened there? I mean, this is pretty extreme. And that cut above your head, we can see on the screen here. Looks pretty vicious. So it looks like you had to get some stitches there.
I actually didn't. I'm a German fencer from the World War I era. I take the scars on the face like a man, and I own it. It's my thing. I walked out of that hospital. They told me that I needed to get like CAT scans of my head. And at that point, I was already well aware of what was going on. And I said, I don't need those cancerous rays going into my brain. So I told them that I had to do the number two and then snuck my way out of there and then walked a mile and a half back through, I guess, an okay area of Boston, if we want to be gentle about it.
Wow. Also, great rare historical reference. Fencers in Germany would they'd get scars on their face. They'd actually put horsehair in their scars to increase the scar tissue because they thought it looked badass. I think it looks pretty cool too. Very, very nice.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Yeah. Very good historical reference there, but you distracted me. So let me just get this straight. So these, again, I mean, there's so many aspects to this. The amount of real estate and, I mean, just the size of these things, the number of people that are there, how there's multiple of these in every city. Your first were in New York. Now you're in Massachusetts showing how the same thing is happening there. Massachusetts is, of course, the place where it's being referenced in the Gateway Pundit article I covered earlier in the show, listing out the benefits that illegals get way over and above anything that Americans are offered by their own government. So you're able to sneak in there. And they're so outraged that you would dare expose what they're doing to the world that they, I guess, assault you. So what happened? How did you, you know, how did your head get hurt? What was going on while the camera was shaking around?
Well, as it was shaking around, they were tackling me. The front guy that you saw grabbed me really hard and I was resisting getting tackled, but I was on two exit doors. And then the other guy that was chasing me behind me really put me on the ground. And then after that, I'll keep it at that, but you know, these are just two strong guys, let's put it that way. And they lightly bashed my head in, to be fair about it. I didn't rat them out in the moment because I know how that looks and I'm a big brain person, unlike some other people maybe that bashed my head in, but I never actually went unconscious. It hurt. I saw flashing lights. It is what it is. Things happen. I don't know what to do. You know, I went in there to defend black people in America, Harrison, and this is just absolutely, it was a little bit disappointing. I'm not going to lie. It was a little bit disappointing.
Well, I mean, like why they would be so threat, like what did they think you were there to do? I mean, they don't know who any of these people are. You know, have you ever thought about just pretending to be a migrant? I mean, would that be an effective way to do this? Because, you know, you've been able to sneak in and out. But obviously, you know, if you're in there with a camera exposing what they're doing, we have the evidence now. They're not afraid to smash your head into the ground. So, I mean, just why? Why are they so infuriated at the idea that you're not allowed to be there? They don't know who any of these people are. So what's the threat of you being there?
I don't know. And I'll just say one thing. There are journalists that have shown this and they just get in there, Harrison, and then they just show this footage and security's all friendly and everything. If you haven't realized by now who's real and who's fake, find out. This is, and I don't need to say anymore, don't trust me. Put me up to the fire. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me what I did didn't happen. It's okay. I got my ass kicked. Excuse my language. I got my butt kicked. I'm not sure if that's okay for the race. I'm not okay with the way that this happened. I'm disappointed. But at the same time, I know why I went in there. I know why I did what I did. I did it for the right reasons. And I did it for America. I actually, frankly, I did it for black Americans in Boston. And so anybody who says otherwise, you know, I'm sorry that that happened. But, you know, I had to show the truth. The money's getting wasted on this. They used emergency funding from COVID. They transferred the money funnels. The money laundering funnels are going straight into a human trafficking. They're raping children in Massachusetts hotels. Okay? It's not good. It's got to stop. This has got to stop.
It does. And you know, this, as big as this operation is, it really pales into the comparison to some of the stuff you've revealed on, what is the island in New York?
Yeah, Randall's Island, yep.
Yeah, that one, I mean, that one is like they created that from scratch, and it is a city that they are building, you know, inside this park. It's mind-blowing. But then again, you see that it's happening in Massachusetts, it's happening in Chicago, all of these places where the black community is standing up and going, why are these people getting so many benefits? We can't even use our own rec center anymore because it's being used to house Haitians. I mean, this is abuse against the American people and the amount of money and the size and the number of people. If you can't see it with your own eyes, you might not believe it's happening. But you're able to actually capture the footage, which is really, I think, the threat to them because – out of sight, out of mind. They want people thinking that this is no big deal. It doesn't affect you in your personal life until you see inside these places and the scale of the operation. It's hard to even fathom how big these places are.
100%, Harrison. And I just have to say, you're seeing it all over the internet. There's so many amazing reporters out there showing the truth of what people are saying on the ground. Black Americans aren't fooled by the last few years, Harrison. They know for a fact that Donald Trump is on their side. And I don't need to say anything else. I've already made a tweet in the last few days, which was a very controversial tweet, by the way, saying, as an independent reporter, I'm not at this moment, and I'm pretty positive about this, going to be voting right now. It has nothing to do with anybody. And I said, all due respect to the candidates, but I'm saying, honestly, I need to stay unbiased. But people need to understand, there are people, not me, people saying, that are Black Americans saying, Donald Trump is my vote this time. So I'm showing you, as a person with no bias, I'm an independent registered and an independent reporter who's saying I probably won't be voting this time, most likely, that you have to understand this is out of control. And it's out of control in Massachusetts, and it's out of control in New York, and it's out of control everywhere where everybody thinks it's just okay. And it's just a humanitarian thing. It's not. It's a big money laundering fest. It's a raping children fest. This is horrible. And it needs to stop immediately.
100%. I've been happy to see your logo at Info Uncensored being retweeted by some big accounts. Are you seeing a lot of response to this? Are you getting a lot of followers? Because, you know, this is the type of stuff that if we had a legitimate mainstream media, they would be doing this. Since they're not doing it, it's up to American citizens to stand up and get the American people the information we need to actually make informed decisions about our political process. How's been the reaction to these videos, and have you received any negative reaction?
Negative reaction isn't common. Actually, weirdly, most of my negative reaction sometimes comes from people in my personal life. They'll get weird about their relationship to me and concerned that the New World Order is going to attack them, and they won't admit that, but the New World Order is so vicious that they know for a fact what I'm showing is the truth and that this is absolutely raw and real because they know me. And that this is insane. Okay, so they're a little worried. But other than that, no, nobody else. And I'm just trying to say that to protect everybody in my life. But this is insane. And these people are out of control. And they mean business. They will literally beat your butt for this. And I'm telling you, please don't do this. But if you want to see this footage, go on at Info Uncensored on X. And it's only on Harrison Smith at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time today. But normally it's 8 a.m. Central Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, every morning, Monday through Friday, okay? This is the best show, number one. This has the most raw footage. It's not even close, guys. And yes, to your answer or to your question, I did get followers for this. You know, they should probably fix the robots on X a little bit. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, yes, I've been getting a great response. TikTok, thank you, TikTok. You've been good. But yeah, it's been good. It's been very good. And despite what anybody wants to say, I've had amazing responses and everybody has just been unbelievably amazing in sharing this stuff. This is really the key. Okay. These are sharing platforms and that's all we need to do is syndicate this information, guys. It's the information. You could see I'm not on camera. Just get this info out there, please. Thank you. Thank you.
Syndicate the information. That's the way to put it. And obviously what we do is I feel like it's the least we can do. You're actually out there on the ground getting this footage in the same way that people who go to the border and capture the incredible footage, the guys from Border Hawk or Muckraker, the guys who actually themselves traveled the trail the whole time. I mean, this is a really interesting new age of media. It's like this is the sort of the promise of the internet fulfilled, where we don't need and we can't rely on the mainstream sources of information anymore. Instead, it's guys like yourself who just take it upon themselves to go out and get the facts that we need, again, to make informed decisions about our political process. And I hope this is opening people's eyes to the reality of the situation. You have some more videos here that I'd like to go through with you. One of the latest that I saw posted all over the place was the lobby of this packed illegal alien hotel in Dedham, Massachusetts. What was this about? How'd you find this location as a place to scope out?
Well, you're not going to believe this. The local news, Fox Boston, was talking about this. Fox Boston. And they're up the street on this. They call it Elm Street. But Fox has their address perfectly, so it doesn't look like Elm Street. But they're on Elm Street. And they're about 350 yards, I don't know, a few football fields down the street. Right there. They talked about it a couple times, one or two articles, and they said this place next door is going to get a special permit. They're going to be able to cater, and it's literally a restaurant that permanently closed. And I'm presuming this. I haven't, in fairness to the place, I haven't followed up and called them yet to figure out if COVID had a massive effect. But I would imagine COVID had a massive effect. And then led into them having to basically try to get themselves to be a catering service, okay? And to be a catering service for these things, you need to have trays and trays and trays of food. I mean, this is a big place. They had 400 families. I guess they say 400 people. Some places they say 400 families. It's a lot of people when you see it in person. This is a three-floor hotel, fully packed, noise all the way to the back. I have tons of extra footage. I haven't even released it all. It's crazy.
It's
out of control.
It is completely insane.
Yeah, and one other thing. And so what they're doing is they're making it a profiteering motive. Instead of people thinking about it always as a humanitarian crisis, think of it as these people do. I think that they push that because that's what they want people to think that they care about. But that's maybe 50% at best, to be honest and generous. They care a lot more about the money. These people are making tons of money. Yeah. Tons of money. Emergency procurements, emergency funding. They are stealing taxpayer dollars to have children be raped, to have people be fed endlessly, to get free rides to jobs they never take, to do all these things that people have to understand. This is not going to stop until people stand up. So I showed lunchtime. I'm sorry I showed lunchtime. They tried to get me out of there. There were signs up on the wall. What does it say? Don't use heating plates. Don't use pressure cookers, toasters, other electrical equipment on your bedside. I mean, who does that? I mean, it's insane. Don't put a fork in a microwave. What are we, 5 years old? I mean, this is insane. But this is the world we live in now. So I'm living here. They're getting free phone service. They get everything that you can imagine. Phone service, please. They get iPhones. They get iPads. They get everything they want. So, yeah, I took a couple documents that weren't actually outgoing mail. I'm sorry I did that. And I got them. Yeah, I got them. And I'm going to keep them. And you guys are done. This game is over. They think I care about being on Fox local news. Don't report it. And when you're up the street and you know what people are going to think? Nothing. I'm on Harrison Smith. I'm on the American Journal, baby. This is real life. Are you kidding me? This is the show. This is it. I don't care at all about Fox. Fox is dead. Have you seen it? Look at Fox. It's over, Harrison.
Look,
it's over. They're fake.
Mainstream media is literally collapsing, and this is exactly why. People understand you're not getting the full story with mainstream media. You can watch CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, left, right, center. It doesn't matter. They're not giving you this information. Their job at this point is to launder official statements from the government that are replete with lies. You're exactly right about the fact that none of these people involved in this, I don't think. I mean, probably the people on the ground, you see some like old ladies in your footage, some old white ladies from Massachusetts that think what they're doing is somehow humanitarian. Really, they're participating in the total destruction of America, and which hugely harms innocent American people. They don't care about that. They care about helping the Haitians because they feel like that's higher up on the virtue ladder or whatever they think. I don't question those people's legitimate reason for doing it. I think they're stupid and wrong, but I think they're legitimate. However, the people that are running the hotels, the people that are running the government contracts, they are making bank out of this. And we even covered earlier today, a hotel that was about to declare bankruptcy, perhaps had declared bankruptcy, was basically destroyed during COVID because of the restrictions. And instead of shutting down, now they have 100% occupancy guaranteed by the government, paying twice as much per room as an average person would, because why shouldn't they? It's not their money, so why not pay twice as much as you have to? I want to play another video. So I think you're exactly right about the greed aspect of this, and we know that companies like Tyson Foods and 400 others are engaged with the Tent Partnership to bring in illegals, call them asylum seekers, give them lawyers to make that claim legally valid so that they can pay them dirt wages and keep them basically forever enthralled as practically indentured servants. I mean, this is all beneficial for them. It's not benefiting anybody else in America. There's another video I want to show here because you got some drone footage that, again, I think does a great job of showing the sheer scale of this operation. It's hard to describe how big these buildings are. It's hard to understand how they are literally creating colonies in our country of foreign immigrants. So where is this footage from? How'd you capture this? And what's the story behind this footage we're seeing here, which has been spread all over? I think this was posted by Conservative Brief, But it is breaking through the mainstream. It is getting out into the general public, this this footage of yours. How'd you get this? Where is it from? What's the story behind this footage?
This footage is incredible. It is, I guess if you would compare it to the Randall's Island drone footage, slightly boring, but it doesn't not show the scale that you're saying. It's absolutely enormous. What it's built on is what they call runway, I guess, 19. It might be runway 19. They took a former army, military, I'll have to check up on that. Fact check me. But it was a government military facility, which they still have government military stuff on. And there is a geo zone thing where I can't fly my drone on part of the island. But on that part, I could, luckily. And I did. And I flew the drone there. And yeah, that's what you see. I mean, it goes up the entire runway. I mean, it's an enormous compound. These things are, you know, people, they just want to act like this stuff is, it can be nothing or it can be what it is. Okay. Right. You can think nothing forever, but this is reality. It's taking up a whole runway. This is how big these things are. Okay. Now imagine they have hotels and they can do these things for 25 floors up and they're just making it all, you know, look a certain type of way in New York City, by the way, and they're staying in 4- and 5-star hotels. I wish I could stay in a 4- and 5-star hotel. Hey, where's my vacation?
Seriously.
Where's my vacation? I want my vacation, dude. Let me go to, I want to go to Saint-Tropez. I'm going to ask the friend, I'm going to ask somebody else to take me on a nice flight, bring me in and let me stay for 6 months at Saint-Tropez in a 4-star hotel, please.
I know.
Is that allowed?
It's really indescribable. And again, this footage for our radio viewers, you've got to go to Henry Facey's Twitter, his X account at Info Uncensored. I still think it's one of the best Twitter handles that you could have possibly gotten. So congratulations on that. at Info Uncensored. And I mean, how do you even describe this? It is a military runway that has these massive tents. Every one of these could hold 10,000 people, probably. I mean, maybe not even an exaggeration. Probably, maybe 10,000. And there's what, yeah. 4, 5, 6? They've got entire tents just for the generators.
I would say at a minimum 2,000 each. At a minimum, you would say there could be at least 2,000 in each, up to 5,000. And then this is not really exaggerating. I mean, 10,000 might be a slight stretch, but 2,000 to 5,000, I would say it's not a stretch. I mean, they're out of control. These are enormous. These are way larger than the ones on Randall's Island, Harrison. You can clearly see that. That's what you're identifying. I mean, these are enormous.
Well, and that's that's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
Randall Island is in New York, where you showed the massive colony being built there. This is in Brooklyn. So in the same city, you have multiple of these locations, plus the hotels that they're renting out, as you point out, 25 stories of migrants packed in, $300 a day that we're spending to keep them there. The scale is overwhelming. The secrecy is disturbing. The footage is incredible. Thank you so much for everything that you do. Seriously, without you, we would have nothing to report on. Henry Facey at Info Uncensored, doing incredible work, finally getting the attention he deserves, but not enough of it. So share this information around. If people don't see it, they don't believe it. Well, Henry Facey makes it to where you can't ignore it any longer at Info Uncensored on X. Thank you so much for joining us, Henry.
Wow. God bless you, Harrison Smith. And hey, what happened with Tim Pool? No good. I love Harrison Smith. Harrison Smith's the man.
Nothing but positive vibes here. Thank you, Henry. Happy to be joined by my next guest, Clint Russell. He's the host of Liberty Lockdown Podcast, which you can find on Rumble or at libertylockdownpodcast.com. You can also follow Clint on X at Liberty Lock Pod, and I encourage you to do so. Welcome to the show once again, Clint.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me, Harrison. This is the Tim Pool Rehabilitation Hour.
I know.
That was a therapy session.
You were on Tim Pool the day before I was, and he was a little bit mad at you, apparently. But what I really loved about your appearance is you have principles, Clint, and that's a rare thing. And one of your principles is being steadfastly against war. And I guess that's somewhat unfortunate in the modern climate, where we're supposed to see certain wars as inevitable goods and others as despicable evils, when really they're all just evil. So, I thought that was a very interesting I probably should have been more prepared, having watched your episode, for what my episode would be like. But we did connect through that. And so I just wanted to bring you on and sort of talk about world war and being anti-war in this day and age.
Yeah, man, it's a fleeting character trait, it seems. I don't know what it is. In fact, Tim made a pretty harsh critique of me, saying, Clint, it seems as if you want to retreat from everything, because we were talking about whether or not we should use the federal government to crack down on the state of New York and the state of California to bring them more in alignment with the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And my answer was no. I'm not interested in going to war with the American people, and I'm not interested in using federal power. I think that the biggest point that I didn't get to make, which I wish I had, is that the reality is that the institutions are completely controlled by Tim Pool's and my enemies.
Right.
Like you don't have the military on your side. You don't have the media on your side. You don't have Hollywood on your side. You don't have the courts on your side. You don't have it. Like, anything is on your side at this point. So this theoretical of whether or not if Donald Trump wins the presidency, we should now crack down on New York and California and bring them back in alignment with the Constitution. It's not happening. What are we talking about? So, yes, sorry, I got sidetracked. But broadly speaking, yes, I'm very much a non-interventionist. I'm not a pacifist. I think that defense is obviously necessary. But there is so many people in our political establishment that are trying to lead us into World War III. And I think it's very important that those that aren't interested in seeing that happen speak out right now.
Absolutely. And you know what? Let's take a little diversion here, because I do want to talk about World War III with you and what that's going to look like and the relation to the Baltimore Bridge collapse. Maybe, you know, we'll get into that in just a second. But what you just hit on is another topic that I've been discussing today, because you have states like Florida banning lab cultured meat, Tennessee banning geoengineering through chemtrails. You've got Louisiana just passed a bill saying they will not adhere to or allow to be imposed any law that comes from the World Economic Forum or the World Health Organization or the UN. But then I point out that the city of New Orleans has already signed on to the C40 cities agreement, which means they'll be implementing these regardless. So we're dealing with this full spectrum attack, from NGOs on the lowest level to federal governments at the highest level. How do we fight back against this? Because I'm right with you. I don't want centralized power dictating what states can do, because, as we know, that will be turned against us eventually. So, I mean, what is the solution when we have this thoroughly decentralized attack? I mean, I guess the counterattack has to also be decentralized. But what is the solution, do you think, if it's not having the federal government impose from a top-down way on these states? What do we do?
Well, if I knew with certainty, we would have already won. But right. I do think that it's going to require a decentralized, you know, counterattack, and right. and preferably peacefully. But I think that this is why I love your show and InfoWars broadly, is that, you know, it's very important that we enter the information war space and we try and wake people up to what we're talking about. And I've been going to bat when it comes to the NGOs and the United Nations and their immigration, you know, Agenda 2030 stuff. Like, this is not organic, what's happening
right.
at the border. And the Libertarian Party historically has been very divided on whether or not we believe in borders at all. You know, right. human beings have a right to travel. But when you realize that this is actually a globalist institution that's attempting to flood your country with the poorest all over the world in the name of global equity, that is not a libertarian value. And this is just another example, basically, of what I'm saying of how you fight back, is that you have to explain to people the nature of what they're actually up against. And I think that even the libertarians, even the people that understand the nefarious nature of the military-industrial complex and central banking and the Federal Reserve and, you know, basically everything, they're the most red-pilled people on the planet, they still struggle to wrap their mind around, because it's a relatively new development, the wholly concocted immigration crisis that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So this is just yet another example. I think that education is key. If you want to find peaceful, you know, resolutions and solutions to things, you have to be speaking to people. And, you know, you and I do that professionally, and let's hope we're making a difference.
Well, I think we are, because I've noticed it in my own life. The conversation has changed, man. The topics people discuss now just around the dinner table do not look like they looked 10 years ago. The concept of false flags, that's been injected into the into the public consciousness. And you're exactly right. I still consider myself a libertarian, but I think it's changed from what it used to mean. What I mean by it is that liberty is still my ultimate value, and that's what I want to achieve through whatever means necessary. And I understand that allowing 10 million illegal immigrants into this country to collapse our system is not bringing me any more liberty. If anything, it's giving the government the excuse they need to empower themselves and to, you know, maximize their influence on my daily life. That's not libertarian to me. That's anti-libertarian. So I'm at odds as well with a lot of the Libertarian Party official policy at this point. But to me, it seems off base because they're not looking at the full picture of human liberty. They're looking at it almost on an individual basis. Can you expand a little bit on that, on the idea that protecting your border, I believe, is in fact a libertarian perspective or position?
Yeah, I mean, there's different schools of thought here. And I think that at the end of the day, the biggest thing that makes this such a challenging topic for libertarians is that public property right now exists. Mm. Libertarians believe it shouldn't, but it does. The federal government owns a ton of land, and they own a ton of the borderland. And how do you answer for that? How do you deal with public property when, in a libertarian framework, all of the property ought to be privatized and the private property owner ought to be able to dictate who comes on their land and who is not allowed to? Right. But that's not the case. So in that current paradigm, you have to deal with – this is my analysis. Other libertarians disagree. But I believe that to avoid the tragedy of the commons, public policy ought to be – that public property is treated as closely to how a private property owner would have utilized that, you know, or defended their property.
Right.
And the reality is that in a private property scenario, you wouldn't allow for vagrancy. You wouldn't allow for a flood of thousands of people to come across your land. You wouldn't allow for drug use and drug addiction on public property. Like, none of this would happen on private property. Why are we allowing it on public property? And if you allow it on public property, then you have the tragedy of the commons. So.
Right.
That has been kind of my compromise position under a totally unlibertarian framework of there being public property. We ought to be regulating it as closely in alignment with how a private property owner would have. And that this is how I've come to the conclusion that we would not be allowing for an invasion of millions of people into private property. Why would we allow for it into public property?
And of course, now we are allowing it into private property with the squatters' rights issues, which all of these are intertwined. But I think that's an amazing way to think about it. And I think if you look at the long term, where this is headed and what the goals of the globalists are, it is the eradication of human liberty worldwide. So to oppose what they're doing and the methods by which they're carrying it out is to support liberty at the end of the day. And that's my construction of it, at least in my mind. But we're going to get into World War III with Clint Russell on the other side of a short commercial break. Remember, you can follow him at LibertyLockdownPodcast.com, on X at LibertyLockPod, and on Rumble, Liberty Lockdown. We'll be right back with Clint Russell talking about World War III and how it's going to look different than every war that's ever come before. Clint Russell is the host of Liberty Lockdown Podcast, which you can find on LibertyLockdownPodcast.com, on Rumble, under Liberty Lockdown, and on Twitter at LibertyLockPod. And when it comes to the topic of World War III and the Baltimore Bridge collapsing, I thought you hit the nail on the head here, Clint. On your X, you quote tweet Andrew Tate, who says this ship was cyber attacked, and you say, well, it's too early to know for sure. What I do know is that technological leaps have made it so that fifth generational warfare will look a lot like this, and chaos and confusion will ensue. Worst of all, our institutions are so rotten that no one will believe our own government's explanations. This to me is sort of highlighting what we notice all the time here, which you and I aren't getting talking points from anybody. We didn't talk about this, you know, before this interview, but we both are on exactly the same wavelength. We both understand exactly the same thing, that whether or not this was a cyber attack, this is what the next world war will look like. It is going to be infrastructure attacks through cyberspace. Fifth generational warfare. Tell us what you mean by that term and how you think this plays into what's going on geopolitically around the world.
Yeah, well, I just think that that's kind of the next iteration of warfare. It became terrorism, became, you know, fourth generational warfare. It was like non-state actors. And now we're dealing with a very technologically advanced world. And I think because of the advent of nuclear weapons and the proliferation of them, you're not going to be able to attack your enemies head on. So you're going to have to do these kind of surreptitious strikes. And that's what the bridge attack would look like if it were. Now, like I said, I have no idea if it was. So, but yeah, I think that's what these next iterations of war will look like.
Yeah, I think you're exact. I'm just right there on the same wavelength with you. I don't know if it was a cyber attack, but if it was, this is what it would look like. And obviously, there was some little bit of predictive programming with the Obama-funded movie showing. I mean, the first thing that happens is a giant container ship is cyber attacked and runs right up onto the beach. So, you know, it's kind of
predictive
funny.
Predictive programming there.
Predictive programming, exactly. And it's also funny that we have, you know, the authorities constantly warning about cyber attacks, about, you know, how this would look and how this is going to happen. And then the instance that people go, ooh, maybe this is what they were talking about, they go, no, shut up, you're crazy, that's not going to happen. I mean, they're basically, you know, criticizing us for coming up with conspiracy theories when really we're just listening to what they're telling us is going to happen next. Cyber attacks, infrastructure attacks. It's a little bit, I don't know, hypocritical or just like schizophrenic that they're the ones telling us that cyber warfare is the next big thing. But if you speculate about cyber warfare, they call you crazy, Clint.
Well, you also have the head of the FBI that's come out recently saying, you know, they have never had more chatter, more red flags since 9/11.
Right.
And then you have, you know, a catastrophe like this occurs. And then we go, hey, was that that? And they go, how dare you ask us that?
Right.
And within 24 hours, they're already, you know, coming out to the podium and telling you nothing to see here. It's like, well, now I think there might be something to see here, huh? So that, I mean, that was my analysis of it. I can't go much deeper than that. As I said, far too early to know, and we may never know, which is the unfortunate nature of our current situation. But, right. You know, Laura Logan was on with Steve Bannon yesterday on the War Room, and she made out a really compelling case. Now, granted, she's doing it with unnamed, you know, intelligence people, like retired, that she has contacts with. But she's claiming that there's many people, both active and retired, that have analyzed this, and they believe strongly that this was, in fact, an attack.
Right.
I think that the angle at which that ship turns and it hits in it such a pinpointed fashion on a vital support beam, it's like, look, I'm not saying that it is, but we have to ask these questions at this point. Especially right after the attack on the concert hall in Russia, you have the head of the FSB that came out yesterday saying, we believe that Western intelligence, you know, permitted or assisted in this attack. And then you have what looks like could be a terrorist attack in America less than a week later. It's like, well, I'm going to ask these questions, whether or not it actually ends up to be the case. I hope not. I don't want to see any more escalation, just to be very clear. I very much want there to be de-escalation. I do not want to end up in a hot war with Russia. No one walks away from that. But I think that it's still important that we ask these questions.
Of course it is. And it's especially strange because it's not like they really have an official story yet anyway. And this reminds me of a story that I covered pretty extensively yesterday. The fact that they're with Kate Middleton, she goes missing for 3 months. People speculate about it and they say these conspiracy theories, big tech should crack down on them. And it's like, Do they expect people just not to be curious, not to speculate, not to ask questions? Because that's the last line in your post. Worst of all, our institutions are so rotten, no one will believe our own government's explanations anymore. So we have to speculate. We have to ask these questions because we know the government lies. And half the time, they're not even giving us a lie to debunk anyway. They're giving us no explanation, but saying you're not allowed to speculate. It's a bizarre new way to treat your populace. Like they're not even allowed to speculate about things that you haven't explained yet. It's very weird.
Yeah. Well, particularly after you and I and everybody else that's, you know, at all critical thinking and truth telling. We're right about almost everything when it came to the lockdowns in the COVID era, and they tried to ban and suppress and algo, you know, obliterate any content that challenged WHO guidelines or Fauci's guidelines, CDC guidelines, DHS guidelines. And then we find out that, hey, actually, we were right, you were wrong, and you've now used almost every three-letter agency to contact big tech to try and suppress people that were right during a pandemic, during a man-made crisis, which, by the way, you created. You robbed me, and then you funded the research that created the bioweapon that was then released on the world, and then you mandated the vaccine, which was almost certainly a bioweapon itself, okay? So I do not respect these people. If you want to tell me that I can't ask questions, you can shove it up your ass. I'm sorry, family show, but I'm just being totally honest right now. You do not, you have lost your moral authority to dictate what I am allowed to think or speak or pontificate upon. I will think freely and I will fight you every step of the way. And this is at the Supreme Court. We have Ketanji Brown Jackson that's up there saying, during a crisis, the government has to have these powers. No, Ketanji. The entire reason that we have the Bill of Rights is that you can never have these powers. Ever. Ever, ever, ever. And I like, that ought to be impeachable. Sorry for the tangent, but that lady should not be a Supreme Court justice. It is a travesty.
Don't you ever apologize for ranting against the government on this show. That was great. Because I completely agree. I could not agree more. These people have lost their moral authority. They've lost their ability to be trusted. Like, you just shouldn't trust liars. What is hard to understand about that? You're right about absolutely everything. And again, it's not irresponsible speculation here. The irresponsible thing is to believe the government that's lied to you so often. And what strikes me is, you know, you've got the Tucker Carlson interview with Putin where Putin basically says, look, we absolutely know that America blew up Nord Stream 2, but the media wouldn't believe it because America controls the media. So that's why we haven't come out and said this, because it would ruin our intelligence sources. So, you know, not only do they know, or not only are they silencing us for speculating, they know that we're right and they're still silencing us. I mean, that's a whole nother level. And the more you peel back, the more you realize just how corrupt this entire system is.
Well, during the hearings on, you know, COVID and the censorship apparatus, they actually acknowledged. Yep. Yeah, they were banning and censoring true things, not lies, ladies and gentlemen. So when they try and frame this as a fight against mis and disinformation, that is mis and disinformation. It is not what they're attempting to do. They are trying to control the narrative. They are trying they're running psychological warfare against the American people. That is a fact. And until we're willing to acknowledge that and then ultimately call for their complete abolition, I don't think that we're on the same page. Like, once you have taken steps that are this insane, you can no longer be in positions of power or authority ever again. As far as I'm concerned, the vast majority of people that are responsible for dictating terms of service on allegedly private corporations, I'm not interested in seeing them removed from power. I'm interested in seeing them put in prison.
Right.
You can't do that. If there's no punishment for violating the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights doesn't exist.
Yep.
These people need to go away. And until that happens, we're not going to be free. And this is also a point of libertarian contention where people say, you know, we don't believe in using the state to go after our enemies. Look, the state is our enemy. If we can't use the state to imprison our enemies to get them to stop being the state, then how are we ever going to be free? It's a conundrum.
It's what the state is for. I mean, unless you're an anarchist and don't believe there should be a state, the reason the state exists is to do things that we as individuals cannot or is unfeasible for us to do ourselves. Protecting the border, punishing criminals. I mean, yeah, if you want to go total anarchy, I'm fine with that too, because if somebody breaks into my house, I'll just bury him in the backyard, no problem. But when you have the anarcho-tyranny of the criminal is let out of prison and then I'd be arrested if I defended myself against them, it's a major issue. We gotta set things right. You're doing a great job of spreading the word. Liberty Lock Pod on Twitter, libertylockdownpodcast.com, Liberty Lockdown on Rumble. Clint Russell, thank you so much for being with us. Keep up the great work, man.
You're the man, Harrison. See you soon.
All right. Stay tuned, folks. Alex Jones in 90 seconds. Don't go anywhere. InfoWarsStore.com is the only way that we get funding. Go there. Support us. Support yourself. Get healthy. Save the world.